specifically to Andy Victor. Good afternoon to you. I'm very pleased that members of the Public Enterprises Committee are here before my members from the Communication Committee. As you can see, the AC benches are empty at the moment, so thank you for coming probably on time. But we're trying to round up people. I think they're having the tea outside. While we're waiting for some of the members to come. Nyotia? Really? Nyotia is here. And then MTN. All right, so we've got altogether 13 presentations. Welcome to everybody. My name is Ismail Vadi. People might have heard of me, but I'm a new chairperson of this committee. Still finding my feet. But I think since the last time I was appointed, I'm getting a sense of what the issues are. And lots of representation from different people, and all of those have been quite helpful to me, just to get an understanding of the sector, the issues, and the complexities. So for those who've taken time to meet with me, thank you very much. We have got indicative times, but we're not really going to follow this particular format. We'll allow each presenter between 10 and 15 minutes at the most. Just to speak to your documents, we've got your documents already, take it as the bulk of the members have read them. But just to highlight the issues as crisply as you can, after you do your presentation, we'll throw it open for questions from members, and then we take the next presentation. So we'll dispense with each presenter and the questions in one go. Some might take more than 15, 20, or 25 minutes. You'll have to bear with us. We are then going to continue till we finish, and it might be into sometime tonight. I can't guarantee that we finish by supper. We have made arrangements for supper. Is it for everybody? We've made arrangements for supper for everybody who is present. So we work till we finish. It might be 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, I don't know. It depends on the questions and the presentations, the quality and caliber of the presentation. Alright, so I think we can then begin. I'm just going to call upon the presenter, you introduce yourself, you kick off, you take questions, and you go off, and the next person comes. It's going to be a bit like a slot machine, but we'll try and push it as far as we can. Is that acceptable as a procedure? Fine. Then we're going to call upon Centec, it's Mr. G. Dube.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good afternoon, and Chairperson and other members of the committee. Centec will be very brief, Chairperson, because 15 minutes, we want to be clear with what we want to say. The presentation is made by Pingani Dube, Executive Regulation and Government Affairs. The overview of the presentation is the introduction, comments, and then critical comments. Centec supports the need for government to take strategic intervention on infrastructure investment whenever it is deemed necessary for the social and economic advancement of the Republic of South Africa. Centec believes that the proposed amendment to the ETA will ensure that a suitable framework is in place which is capable of being utilized where similar interventions are identified by government as being critical to the fulfillment of future objectives and policy considerations. Centec proposes that Section 2 of the bill, which provides for the insertion of the subsection 13 to Section 5 of the ECA, should be amended to read as follows. 13, the Minister may, after having obtained Cabinet approval, issue a policy direction in order to initiate and facilitate intervention by government to ensure strategic ICT infrastructure investment, and then provide for a framework for a licensing of public entities in which the state holds at least 75% of the share in such public entities by the authority. What we are saying, Chairperson, from Centec and members of the committee, is that if one looks at the Infraco Bill, Section 8, Subsection 7, talks about in instances where the state holds at least 75% or more. So we were just suggesting that if the intervention has to happen, Chairperson, let it be with state entities where a government has got 75% or more. Centec has suggested that a limit as proposed be included in subsection 13b, of the bill as only entities in which the state has a shareholding in excess of 75 will be capable of executing the mandate of government in initiating and facilitating strategically required interventions within South Africa's ICT industry. A public entity in which government does not have a majority stakeholding may not necessarily be the most appropriate vehicle for the facilitation and implementation of government strategic objectives or policy considerations. Chairperson and members of the committee, you know, I don't think that we will conclude without talking about our critical comment, which is the Public Finance Management Act. Chairperson, Sentech proposes that the Public Finance Management Act be amended to address a concern previously raised by Sentech regarding the disparate treatment of Infraco and Sentech under the PFMA and as proposed in the Infraco bill, which is a Schedule 2. Chairperson and members of the committee, Sentech is a Schedule 3 and it is very difficult to operate under those circumstances. During the Infraco deliberations, members of the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprises were so kind to suggest that, you know, if this matter is brought before this committee and the Department of Communications to look at the possibility of amending Sentech Act in order to make Sentech a Schedule 2 so that it can compete on the same footing with Infraco. Under the Infraco Bill, Broadband Infraco Limited and Broadband Infra are to be included in Schedule 2 of the PFMA. Sentech is currently categorized as a national government business enterprise listed under Part B of Schedule 3 of the PFMA. As a national government business enterprise, Sentech is subject to onerous borrowing constraints. Infraco will not be subject to the same constraints. There is no justifiable basis for differentiating between Sentech and Infraco in respect of their respective treatment under the PFMA, as they have both been identified as major providers of broadband infrastructure in South Africa. Therefore, Sentech proposes that the PFMA be amended to remove Sentech from Schedule B, from Part B of Schedule 3 of the PFMA, and include Sentech in Schedule 2 of the PFMA, just like in Franco Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Mack?
If Sentech will forgive us, I think that this is not the time and the place to deal with Sentech's PMFA status. I think you know that we are in fact sympathetic to your position on that matter, but this is not, I think, the moment to deal with that. Therefore, can I limit my question simply to the main point of your proposal? And I ask for clarification. You seem to be taking no issue with the idea of the format in which the Department of Communications wants to facilitate these strategic interventions. And clarify for me, do you not see the difficulty from the public interest point of view when we have very recently legislated the ECA, which opens up the sector for communication? Do you not see the difficulty of now allowing government to reintroduce state telcos, because that is what this amounts to? And secondly, do you not see what I think is our major difficulty here, that this bill introduces a quite separate, and as some people have called it, a parallel licensing regime? ICASA is the body that does the licensing for the sector. But these amendments effectively allow the cabinet, the minister with the cabinet, to intrude and effectively to give ICASA instruction to license certain entities. Is Sentech simply not taking issue with those matters? And you can just place it on the record one way or the other. Your own position as an SOE, one understands what influences. So I think that is all really that I would want to know. And then you have absolutely not addressed at all the existing Section 5.3d, which is one of the categories of networks that ICASA can't invite applications for competition for until the minister has issued her policy directions. And that is the one that refers to a network where a state entity has 25%. Because you make your proposal under the new subsection 13
Thank you very much, Member Smart. At Sentech, what we have realized is that we do not have to give chase to a lizard when we are up against a crocodile. We will not give chase to a lizard when we are up against a crocodile. That simply means, you know, Infraco is the crocodile here that we must deal with. And the only way for us to deal with Infraco is for us to be reclassified correctly. Because, you know, Cabinet took a decision on the 18th of April 2007 that there shall be Infraco. So what we are saying here is that, you know, we just have to focus on this crocodile. And the second step is you can only fight a crocodile when it is outside the water, not in the water. So we just want to say that if we are reclassified correctly, we will deal with the animal.
Say, listen, hopefully there won't become a crocodile when these changes do take place. I was also a little bit concerned the moment Mr. Dube referred to lizards and crocodiles, he might be referring to some of the members here. But I think he found his way around it. Sebastian, I've also heard Mr. Dube referring to Ifraco as a competitor to Sentech. Shouldn't we rather than asking each other so instead of being a competitor? And then your comment on the object of the bill, I'm referring to the bill here. Amongst others, reducing the cost to communicate by providing infrastructure at a wholesale rate. It goes on to say to operators. The concern, obviously, if it's the operators, the reduction of cost could then stop there and not strike its way right through to the end user. Your comment shouldn't be rather stop at wholesale rate. It then in itself implies, amongst others, the operators as well the end user who might not be a bank or another operator. Thank you.
Chairperson, we will attempt to answer the Honourable Member's question. But from Sentech side, we have said this when we appeared before the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprises that
the distinction that Sentech will focus on wireless and Infraco on cable, it is more of a shareholder issue. From a policy and regulatory point of view, they are all on the same footing.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you for the presentation. Chairperson, I would like to know from Sentech, because Sentech is saying it is subjected to onerous borrowing constraints. One would like Sentech to put more flesh on this one so we really get what you mean by the onerous borrowing constraints which you are subjected to. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member Nkuna. To give an example, as a Schedule 3, when one is in class with other students, is that, you know, as a Schedule 3, when one is first, one has to say to the teacher, may I please go out? If the teacher says no, then you can't go out. But the Schedule 2 can come in and go out as they please without even asking the teacher. In business sense, it means that as a Schedule 3, a number of entities sitting with us here have come to Sentech with a view of putting money in Sentech to make the business grow. But as a Schedule 3, we cannot start engaging them because we have to go to the Minister of Communications and get concurrence of the Minister of Finance. In that regard, it is delaying because some of the entities, you sign an NDA. When you have signed an NDA with one of the private entities, when you say to them, I'm going to the Minister of Communications and then after concurrence of the Minister of Finance, you know, to them the turnaround time, they've moved on. But with a Schedule 2, that entity can enter into those negotiations and conclude without being subjected to going to the Minister of Finance. We are not saying we do not want to comply, but we are simply saying it is onerous in the sense that others don't have that limitation. And in the ICT sector, it is difficult to not to take decisions quickly. So if we are allowed to take decision with the approval of the shareholder, of course, we will be in a position to compete with others.
Mr. Peters, follow up, and then Mr. Hendrickson. Okay. Peter Hendrickson.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Peter Hendrickson. I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprises, who dealt extensively with the Infraco legislation. Now, Chairperson, I'm first with regard to Centec. And Mr. Dugas is correct. We did advise Centec that they need to enter into talks with their minister with regard to whether they are a Schedule 3B or a Schedule 2. That debate has got no place in this legislation. We said that with the previous, when they came to us there also. It's something else they need to take up somewhere else. Secondly, the question of the state getting involved with broadband. That principle, I think, has been dealt with in the Infraco legislation. Whether you agree with the Infraco legislation or the Act is besides the point. That was dealt with. I think the purpose of this amendment is to deal only with the licensing process, not whether you believe the state should be involved in the industry or not.
Sure, that, however, is not what the amendment bill here does. We understand what happened legally, but this goes far beyond catering for Infraco, and that is the big problem.
We'll discuss it on Friday. All right. No further questions.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. The Honourable Member from the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprises is correct. However, Chairperson, I just want to place it on record that the reclassification of Centec is a critical issue. It was raised before them, and we will raise it even today, Chairperson. The fact that it cannot be raised here, we don't agree with it, we disagree. We've got a legal opinion to the fact that actually during the issue of Infraco, Centec could still be reclassified. You know, the fact that the Honourable Member is saying that it could not happen then, we disagree with that, Chairperson. We say it could have happened. It is unfortunately, the committee advised us correctly that they do not want to deal with it. It is better dealt by this committee and the Department of Public of Communication.
Thank you very much. It's a matter which we will follow up later on. All right, if there's no further questions on this matter, on this presentation, can we then thank Mr. Dube and call upon CLC?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. We will still deal with the issue of Infraco and Centec.
There are three people here, Ms. Moshabi, Mr. Guerrera, and there are only two people, huh?
Yes.
Yes, okay. Who's doing the presentation?
I'll introduce us. Thank you very much. We represented, Selfie's being represented by myself, Diana Moshabi, and Shumani Guerrera. We'd like to thank the Portfolio Committee for the opportunity to present our views here today. The presentation will address three key issues, the first being the current licensing framework, the second, the sufficiency of the ECA Act, and thirdly, the correct procedure. So I'd like to hand over to Shumani, who will take us through the presentation.
Thank you, Viola, and thank you, the Chairperson. Chairperson, I'll begin the presentation on the licensing sections in the ECA, which is Section 5. Section 5.1 of the ECA Act provides that the authority may, in accordance with this chapter and the regulations prescribed here under, grant individual and class licenses. Section 9.1 and 2A of the ECA Act, on the other hand, provides that any person may, upon invitation by the authority, subject to the provisions of this Act, apply for an individual license in the prescribed manner. Subsection 2 goes on to say the authority must give notice of the application in the Gazette, and A, invite interested persons to apply and submit written representations in relation to the application within the period mentioned in the notice. Section 9.1 and 2A of the EC Act, that is Section 5 of the EC Act, reveals that only ICASA can grant individual licenses and class licenses.
Furthermore, these licenses can be granted to any person upon a successful application for a license pursuant to an invitation to apply or the ICA and compliance with the requirements stated in that particular ICA. So this admits that any person referred to in Section 9.1 includes a public entity as envisaged in the proposed bill and also as defined in Section 1 of the Public Finance Management Act, number 1 of 1999. So this admits that the EC Act in its current form provides for the licensing framework that includes the licensing of public entities as defined in the PSMA. This framework falls under the auspices of ICASA, which is also the only body that can legitimately grant individual and class licenses in terms of the EC Act. While Section 3.1 of the EC Act grants the minister the authority to make policies on matters of national policy applicable to the ICT sector, Section 3, subsection 3, makes it clear that these powers do not include the granting, amendment, transfer, renewal, suspension, or revocation of the license. So we believe that the granting, amendment, transfer, renewal, suspension, or revocation of licenses is the forte of the authority in terms of the EC Act. We respectfully submit that the EC Act very clearly sets out the process to be followed in order to obtain an individual electronic network service license or an individual electronic communication service license. As stated above, it is our submission that public entities as envisaged in the bill fall within the definition of a person as defined in Section 1 of the EC Act, and therefore they should apply for individual licenses only after an invitation to apply has been issued by the authority. We also note that the minister will still retain the right to issue a policy direction in terms of Section 5.6 of the EC Act with regard to applications for individual ECNS licenses. It is our considered opinion that there exists no legitimate grounds for the proposed amendment of the EC Act as it currently caters for the purpose for which it is thought to be amended. However, should our proposals not be favorably considered, South Sea submits that the Minister's strategic intervention, as envisaged in the proposed bill, should be made through the amendment of Section 3 of the EC Act and not Section 5. So this is because Section 5 deals with licensing and Section 3 with ministerial policy direction. In conclusion, South Sea supports the national drive to reduce the cost of communications. However, we respectfully submit that the prescribed procedures in the EC Act should be followed in the licensing of any individual licensee. South Sea would like to thank the Portfolio Committee for the opportunity to make oral presentations, and we hope that our submissions will be given to consideration by the Portfolio Committee.
Thank you very much. Questions?
Chair, I agree with Chelsea that no amendment was actually necessary. In fact, I said earlier, and I seem to remember Infoco having a similar sentiment, that if only the Minister had in fact issued the relevant policy directions under Section 5.6, I believe that all of this could have proceeded as the ECA stands, which after all anticipates some state entities having a role in the building of big networks. But if I understood the department, the DOC, correctly, what they are looking for are two possibly contradictory things. They're looking for a situation in which the licensing of InfraCo will occur without a beauty contest. But secondly, their amendment goes way beyond dealing simply with InfraCo. And dealing with InfraCo is, yes, it is what we have to do. Their amendment, of course, is far, far wider. It creates a new licensing regime. And in fact, the way the department pitched it to us during their own briefing to us was in fact that they thought it was a great idea that every so often, if the idea arises that a public entity, as they've chosen to define it, might contribute, it could enter the terrain. So from the DOC side, clearly there's a an aspiration for state strategic intervention, and that's the thing that worries us so much when we are really, really just beginning to make a reality of the ECA. But so I agree with you that I think actually the ECA as it stands cases for it. But that would imply, would it not, that if such a policy direction were issued, if IGASA issued the invitation, that others could also apply for this particular license.
Did you get the question?
Yes, that is correct. That is the process we propose. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hendrick.
Chairperson, may I first of all declare my, interest? I'm a CLC client. Not necessarily a very happy one, but I am a CLC client. Do I understand CLC correctly when they say, is that, look, the Act already makes allowances. And therefore you're saying you don't need this amendment. Is that correct? Is that what you're saying? I'm still saying, what is your objection to the amendment itself? Or are you objecting to the state getting involved?
Yes, the response to the first question is yes. We think we believe actually that the Act caters for that process. To the second question, yes, we do object, and the objection is on the state intervention, that there is no need in the context of the ECA for the minister to have these extra powers to do what the proposed bill would have her do.
Can I add? I'm not quite sure if I'm understanding. Chelsea says that the minister shouldn't have these powers because the powers are already there. Now, are they objecting to the minister having powers to provide for the state to enter into this market? Or do you want the state? Is the intention of government is for the state to enter into the market specifically? If I understand correctly, the way the Act reads at the moment is that the state would have to compete. Everybody else can also come and apply. Also has to be invited. But yet the purpose is for a state entity to be licensed, not for a private entity to be licensed.
Yes, but Section 192 of the Constitution, in terms of that section, ICASA was established, SATRA and then ICASA, for that specific purpose, licensing and regulating the industry. And that we do not really see the need for the Act to now allow the minister to do the same duty that we have an independent authority to. Unless, of course, the challenge is on the authority of the CASA to license.
Is the intention not that you provide an additional tool to ICASA to grant a license when a state entity makes an application? So it will still be ICASA that grants the license. It is just the conditions that need to be met or the process that needs to be followed that is amended. But it is still ICASA at the end of the day that makes the decision.
What we're saying then is that will be superfluous. It will be redundant. ICASA can do that without this bill being passed.
The question is directed to the CLC.
I'll go to your last part. However, if your submission is not accepted, this is what you consider that you must amend Section 3, not Section 5. How do we do that? I'm just raising that just so that I facilitate the discussion to move forward. We need not to discuss. The intention is clear. Cabinet has approved that they need to intervene. But I'm saying, Chair, we don't want to do that in a way which is going to cause this situation in the industry itself. But I'm saying if, like you're indicating on the submission, however, if that is not taken, you suggest that Section 3 should be the one which is used as a
Yeah, I actually do regret having put that paragraph in there. But now, Section 3 gives the minister the power to make policy direction. And now, in terms, if the minister were to be able to propose what this proposed bill seeks to do under Section 3, I would assume that Section 5-6 will still apply, that with regard to individual electronic network licenses, that the minister will still have to issue another policy direction in terms of that section. And that the ICASA processes or the EC Act processes will be followed. And ICASA would issue that licenses depending on whether or not that public entity or state-owned entity meets the requirement, and will be subject to the same terms and conditions that all other licensees or operators are subjected to.
Maybe a follow-up. I just want to understand. In terms of the proposal of the department, Cabinet has taken a decision that this is a SOE which must do the act to push certain objectives of government. It has been already identified. Currently, as it stands, when you call for those nominations, you want everyone else to apply. We are saying even if Cabinet has indicated or has identified that public entity, still, for the sake of a procedure or a process, other people must apply, but already an entity has been identified. How do we deal that particular matter? Let us try to get around that. Because it will seem, if you follow the current process as they are, it will mean that all application and so on. Everything that we do is equal to sort of the application and then how do we deal with the situation? Because at that point,
can I consult with my senior before answering your question? Thank you.
We need a tea break for you to cook it.
Can Chairperson, while they're still...
Yeah, there are more questions.
Can I try to respond to the question? The confusion could have been that the proposed bill is not very clear on what its intention was. Maybe the department could have stuck to the Infraco bill or called it the Infraco bill to say this is what we want to do. And then we make our representations tailored to the Infraco bill. But now you're talking about public entities which are already covered under the EC Act, which can still be licensed in terms of that act. But now if it's an emergency situation, maybe you could have called it the Infraco bill and try to clarify it instead of one page that talks about public entities while giving the ministry-wide powers.
Chairman, thanks. I think all of us agree that the right and responsibility to issue license must be located and stay with the regulator. That's how we do that. It can't be like included in the Infraco Bill Act, whatever it can't be. The licensing responsibility lies solely with the regulator, ICASA. I think we had to say quite unnecessary. As long as I can remember, call was made by all parties, including the president, to reduce the cost of communication. If we go the ordinary route, the IDA route, you could have a situation. One of the applicants could be MTN. Just an example. Or Chelsea. And you could win the license and not address the serious or the most serious purpose of this law is to ensure that we reduce the cost of communications. And that's the sole purpose. If we adhere to that call many years back, I remember Smart, you and some of us actually took the cost and the president took it up to his state of the nation address. We're sitting now and we have to bite the bullet and see this through and how do we do it best. Even under the current ECA, and I think you're right, how do we make sure that the license goes to that intervention that's been located? IFRACO. It doesn't go to anybody else. But IFRACO has one purpose, is to make services available at a serious reduced price. And hopefully the rest will follow suit. Because we can't leave it. After many years, we've realized we can't leave it to the sector. They won't do it. That's the reality. Some people might not like it, but this is the reality. It's been left there. To do it on your own for many years, you haven't done it. Thank you, Chairperson. I can say whatever I want. You might call it rubbish, but I can tell you. Then you have to be much softer, so you don't pick it up.
I think we agree with the Honourable Member that reducing the cost of telecommunications in South Africa is something that needs to happen. I think our submission really just deals with the fact that we believe that the ECA Act does provide for us to be able to do it in terms of the way we've submitted, and that we need to look at other regulations to enable us to help us reduce the cost of doing business in South Africa.
Chair, thanks. I think part of my greeting being answered where let's try not getting Infraco involved, because when I recall when Comrade Eric and myself were sharing the Infraco bill, Darcy was also there, although they presented their view, they were supportive of the intervention. So I think that the focus today is actually on the EC amendment, where I think that the problem now here is time's of the essence. Rennie has explained earlier, if you have ICA, we might have a problem with getting everyone involved again, and then we might not address the problem, the very same problem what we're trying to address. And just looking at the Southeast submission here, it's also talking about the fact that ICASA is already given a task of giving of regulating the sector and giving licenses. And where Peter says it's 100% correct, what the EC amendment is giving the government or giving the minister the tool and comes as a tool where we can address a specialized a special licensing requirement or special licensing environment to address particular issues.
Question or comment? Jean?
Yeah, it seems to me it is fruitful to do the odd comment because we move the debate further. Just two things maybe not to forget or lose from our minds. The ECA says very specifically, the minister, in her powers of making policy direction, may make no such policy to do with the grant, renewal, amendment, repeal, revocation of licenses. The Act is very clear. Licensing is the one thing she may not do, and for excellent reasons, which we won't go into. One thing I think maybe we shouldn't forget until we've heard all the submissions, Chair, we are assuming that nobody else might be interested in fact in applying in a beauty contest for just this kind of a license. There are at least two submissions that I remember reading with some interest who appear to want to be involved, and they're private sector players. in interventions like this. Why not more strategic networks, Peter? You can't, if you differ, then you are supporting the very concern that the state will in fact now enter, monopolize, create a second filter, and we're back to square one. So let's just not, all I'm saying is please don't let's forget those factors. But there's another very interesting argument made by CLC which we should ventilate. And that is they oppose the idea of using the definition of public entity. And it's a very interesting argument, and which I think they should speak on a little more. The ECA, as it stands, talks simply of state entities. And instead of my summarizing your position on public entities, won't CLC just talk to us for a minute about why it's not a good idea to use that definition?
My apologies, I didn't get that last part of the question.
You're suggesting that public entity is the wrong expression, the one, the definition from the PMFA. You're suggesting its inclusion now into the ECA is not a good idea. And then you make the point that under the Act, a person already includes a juristic person, therefore anybody is any person, therefore it's not necessary. But in addition, you point to the fact that in the PMFA, a public entity can be a number of animals. It can be the kind of thing that gets money from us or is allowed to levy license fees or whatever and must report to Parliament, but it can also be a completely different kind of animal, which is clearly the kind of animal the crocodile is about to become, which is a national business enterprise. It borrows its money. It will become a player in the market. The Minister Irwin has already said it won't necessarily remain a state company. In fact, you know, it won't. So your argument seems to have been, one, that it's not necessary to use such a definition, public entity, and secondly, that it's not desirable, and I thought it might be useful to hear more on the subject of why it's not desirable. It seems to me now not to be a good idea after reading your and other submissions.
Thank you, Chairperson. What he's saying is that a person, as defined under Section 1 of the EC Act, includes public entities. And we also know that public entities, as defined in the PFMA, they include the SABC, Telecom, I'm not sure about Neotel, the entities that are already licensed by ICASA.
Eric, this is the last question.
I think it's okay, Chair, maybe let us proceed. But I was saying, Chair, we are trying to revoke the amendment. We are pretty aware that currently, in terms of Section 3, subsection 3, talking about the issue that the minister cannot interfere with blah 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 and so on. I'm saying that we're in a process now of revoking amendment to the same act you are talking about. So that we don't talk as if we're talking about a certain act referring to the ECA. We're discussing the amendment of the ECA as we're doing now. So, but we respect that point that we don't want to interfere with the work of the regulator. I think we should respect that. At all costs. That's why my appeal will be consistent throughout the presentation. How do we do this in a manner which will be acceptable to all the stakeholders? Please, if they present, they must also be able to go that far. It's not sufficient to say the state must not intervene. It does not assist that much. We want a progress. I think the CLC one is progressive. What is critical, but consider that this is what you may do at a certain section and so on. I think can assist us.
But submissions have been made on the basis of the DOC's proposed amendments. I mean, we understand, Eric, I think we're in the same place. But the submissions have been made, in fairness, on the DOC's amendments, which don't do that thing that you have just described. So you have to allow them to speak to what is on the table.
All right, is there any fight?
I don't want to dialogue. DOC, when they presented Friday, they said we are not married to the section which we have put here. They could have came to that position of DOC. It's not my fault that they were not there. DOC is there. We are not married to this. We are welcoming every suggestion to make sure that these things become a success in an acceptable manner. That's what DOC said. So I'm on the opinion that DOC cannot say you are married in section 5 and section 4. They are also open-minded. So they said.
All right. Any final comments? Closing remarks?
Nothing at this point. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Then we can call upon the sister, Ms. Doyle, from MNET Multi-Choice in Obicum.
Chair, if you'll just give us a second to distribute our presentation to the members.
You can leave it here and they'll distribute it. There are copies of presentations in front. See some of them, but the staff members will distribute it. You may proceed.
Afternoon, Chairperson, Honourable Members. If we can just start by introducing the team appearing before you today. I'm joined by Mr. Alon Doyle, who's sitting on my right. He's the Regulatory Affairs Manager for the MIH Group. Behind Mr. Doyle is Ms. Amanda Armstrong. Given all the issues of legal interpretation, we thought it would be helpful to bring Amanda, who is a director at Workman's Attorneys, to assist us. And my name is Karen Wallenberg. I deal with regulatory and legal affairs for MNET. Chair, I think as a team we've made many appearances before the committee, but I think it's our first time appearing before you. So if I could just take the chance to say a word of welcome. In the course of our submission today, we are going to raise a number of concerns with the proposed amendments. However, before we start with our presentation, I'd just like the Honourable Members to bear in mind that we understand and support the stated objectives of these amendments, and our concern is really with the way in which the government is seeking to achieve these objectives. What Anon and Amanda are going to expand on is first, that we believe that it would be possible to meet these objectives without amending the ECA as proposed. Second, what we'll deal with are the serious flaws in the proposed amendments, which we would seriously urge the members to consider. I'll hand over to Anon now to continue with our presentation.
Thank you, Chair. I think we very similar to colleagues in the sector, SLC, in that we also in agreement that the way that the bill is currently formed and drafted does not necessitate an amendment to the EC Act. The EC Act in its current form already allows any person, including a state-owned entity, to apply to a CASA for any one of the licenses set out in Chapter 3, being the Electronic Communications Network Services, Broadcasting Services, and Electronic Communication Services. Of course, in the case of the Electronic Communications Network Services, ICASA can only put out an invitation to apply for an individual ECNS license subject to a policy determination by the Minister. And very clearly in that section, 5, sub 6 of the EC Act, it said that this would be done in the context of a managed liberalisation, that ICASA could only accept and consider those applications in terms of a policy direction. It was around about 2 years ago in this very same room when we were formulating the EC Act that this very same section had to be drafted very carefully so that it wouldn't run afoul of the Section 192 in the Constitution. And that time it was made fairly clear that if the Minister were to be more directive in terms of who would be licensed, immediately this section would have to fall away in terms of a constitutional challenge. And so it was worded in such a way that what the Minister would be merely doing to ICASA was saying, it's okay, we're going to liberalise the sector further, we're going to open up for licensing of
further infrastructure development in South Africa, and you may now put out an invitation to apply. And quite rightly pointed out by some of the members here today, is that that doesn't provide for the minister to say license Infraco, because the minute that she does so, she would be running afoul of the constitutional protection that ICASA has in terms of its independence to make licensing decisions. In this context, we think that the EC Act, in its current form, does empower the minister to issue a policy direction to consider those applications in a way that could facilitate the licensing of a public entity such as Infraco. But there would still have to be a public process. As the Honourable Members of Parliament may recall, previously to the current Act that we have, but also within the context of Section 192, there was another public entity, namely the SABC, that needed to be licensed for regional television. And in a very similar manner, that those amendments to the then Broadcasting Act, it was amendment of 2002, had to be couched in such a way that it did not infringe upon the discretion of ICASA to make a decision whether or not to license the SABC in the context of regional television. It is our view that if we look at the combination of liberalizing the electronic communications sector, if we have to look at the application of competition provisions in terms of both the EC Act and the Competition Act and market forces, a number of the objectives that have been set out in the explanatory memorandum and indeed in the preamble of this bill would be achieved in the normal course of market forces. And thus it really falls to government to look at why it wants to intervene before the very bill, or should I say the very act which they put in place 2 years ago, is really up in place and running. ICASA still has a certain period in which to convert the existing licensees, and one of the clear provisions in that chapter dealing with conversion of licensees is that you come across with no monopolies. I'll hand over to Amanda now to continue.
Good afternoon, Ms. Bailey, and members of the committee. In essence, what this bill is proposing is the insertion of a new subsection 13 into section 5 to provide for a separate framework for what the DOC describes as, and I quote, the special licensing of public entities by ICASA. And the bill provides that public entity is to have the meaning given to it in the Public Finance Management Act. Now, that immediately raises difficulties because public entities within the communication sector would include, for example, and I'm naming the big players, the SABC, Centic, Telkom, Telkom Media, possibly Vodacom, Eskom including EDTEL and Transnet including Transtel. The first adverse implication of the bill is that to suggest that these public entities that I have just referred to, and in many instances they are dominant players within the communication sector, to suggest that they be licensed in any manner different from other entities conflicts with government's policy of managed liberalization of the electronic communication sector. And in fact, the proposed amendments to the Act could well serve to entrench the dominance of state-owned entities in the sector, which would completely conflict with the stated objective in the EC Act of managed liberalisation. The second adverse implication is a competition one. And the fact is that the public entities I referred to a moment ago compete directly with private entities within the sector, for example, ETV, MNET, Orbicom, the entities to whom the subscription broadcasting services are to be granted, MTN, Celty, and numerous other providers in the telecommunications sector. And for there to be fair competition between competitors within a category of service, those services must be licensed according to identical processes, first of all, and secondly, they must be subject to identical substantive considerations and conditions. The third serious difficulty with the bill is a constitutional one. As you are aware, Section 192 of the Constitution provides that national legislation must establish an independent authority to regulate broadcasting. The ICASA Act establishes such a body, namely ICASA, and in terms of that statute, ICASA is required to be impartial, and I'd like to refer in particular to Section 3, Subsection 3 and 4 of the ICASA Act, where it states, and I quote, "The authority is independent and subject only to the Constitution and the laws, and must be impartial and must perform its functions without fear, favour, or prejudice." And in terms of Subsection 4, "The authority must function without any political or commercial interference." And it's for this reason that ICASA, as the independent regulator, must deal with all matters pertaining to the licensing of services, and that all persons requiring a license are treated equally. And it's precisely for this reason that one has Subsection 3 inserted into Section 3 of the EC Act, which provides, and I quote, "No policy made by the minister may be made or issued regarding the granting, amendment, transfer, renewal, suspension, or revocation of a license, except as permitted in terms of the Act." And thus, the bill is currently drafted contravenes Section 192 of the Constitution, the provisions of the ICASA Act I've just referred to, and certain provisions of the EC Act itself. Now, we, in the multi-choice and Orbicom, hear the difficulties that the government has. We understand and support your objectives. So we've tried to find a solution that accords with the government's objectives, but at the same time averts the serious adverse implications I've just referred to. And our proposal is that there be a very simple amendment to the EC Act, and that, in fact, into Section 2 of the EC Act, which deals with objectives, and we propose that there be a clause inserted into paragraph D of that section, so that the section would read in the future that one of the objectives of the EC Act is to encourage investment, including strategic ICT infrastructure investment and innovation in the communications sector. And we believe that this amendment would enable the minister, in terms of Section 3 of the EC Act, to issue a policy direction to ICASA that would inter alia achieve government's objectives. If our solution were to find favour, there would obviously be some consequential amendments to the bill, inter alia firstly to the title of the bill and secondly to the preamble. Obviously, item 1 of the bill would also need to then be removed. That's the proposed insertion of the definition of public entity. And finally, item 2 would be need to be amended along the lines of our proposal. So we've tried to, I expect, find a compromise solution where the government objectives that we support are met, but at the same time, the concerns that we and other members of the sector are raising are addressed and avoided. Thank you.
Thank you very much for a very concise presentation, very clear. Question? Dean?
When I read this, I thought, what an elegant solution. Because what it deals with is, of course, that section of Section 3 that says the minister may make no policy directions which are in conflict with the objectives of the Act.
Right.
So you have now simply put in an objective, which would then make it possible. So I don't know how elegant. But now, am I right in thinking that this still implies a beauty contest, which is the thing that's worrying Eric and Peter, Hendrix. But also, look, it's not a already, man. But so am I right that still implies the beauty contest? Apart from that, I think very elegant. And let me say, Chad, you know, let me make a confession. Not until I read the NAB and this submission, and I think there was another, did I see the implications for broadcasting, because we're also wrapped up in the undersea cables and the telecoms infrastructure. But of course, that's correct. And I immediately remembered the thing to which Mr. Doyle has just referred, a most horrendous battle we had in this committee when the Broadcast Act was being amended, because the minister wanted to dictate that there would be 3 regional public broadcasters. She would appoint the board, Finnish and Cloud, and of course we said, sorry, not possible under the Constitution. And Will someone just remind me exactly how we phrased that? It was very awkward. Sometimes one has to make these terribly clumsy, awkward compromises. And we found a way of phrasing it. We said something like, the SABC must apply to ICASA for regional licenses, which in due course the poor SABC did, and the poor ICASA issued, and to this day there are no regional public broadcasters. We never did believe they were. But so these clumsy solutions sometimes are worked out. But may I ask now, Mr. Doyle, and so the implication is then still a beauty contest, is it, or is it not necessarily?
Every time you talk about a beauty contest, you exclude me. Every time you talk about a beauty contest, you exclude me. I'm being discriminated again. Thank you. Ernest?
If I may answer the question, that is what we're saying. We are saying, given the constitutional imperatives and given the competition imperatives, we are saying the way around this problem is for the minister to issue a policy direction to ICASA that ICASA may accept and consider applications for individual electronic communications network services. That would then allow ICASA to issue an ICA. Infoco would obviously be one of the applicants and would one would assume be granted a license, but I wouldn't want to prejudge the ICASA's decision. But it would not preclude other applicants from also being licensed at the same time. And we can see no harm in that. It means that government objectives are being met in that Infoco is licensed and can proceed to try and provide broadband at prices that are affordable. But at the same time, it will expand competition within the sector, which can only be a good thing. So we are saying very much it can only be a beauty contest, but we believe that's a win-win for everybody, both for government and for opening up the sector to private entities at the same time. I'm going to ask Mr. Doyle to answer the second question.
In relation to your query, yes, it was drafted in such a way that an obligation was imposed upon the SABC to apply to ICASA for two regional television licenses, and that amendment also put in place how those services were to be rendered. There was also a time frame put in place in that amendment in terms of the period within which the SABC had to apply, and as I recall at the time, I was at ICASA and we had to develop a policy framework for regional TV within a period of 8 months in order to be ready for the SABC application. But yes, it was phrased in such a way that the discretion of ICASA wasn't fettered. And it also highlights sometimes that although they are best of intentions, they don't always deliver, because in that case, the SABC was in fact granted the license. But the issuing of that license still hasn't taken place because the SABC hasn't given any intention to actually roll out regional television in an analog setup. So I would imagine they will utilize those licenses in future in the digital migration. But in fact, although those amendments took place to the Broadcasting Act in 2002, today there has been no use of those licenses.
Randy,
is my understanding, Amanda, correct when I say if the minister after the consultation with the cabinet colleagues issues that policy directives in a proper way, you could exclude, not in an uncompetitive manner necessarily, you can exclude those potential ones. You could have the competition, but also kind of to a certain extent be sure the license would come from among them. I can imagine other public entities also applying for the license, and thus could then end up with reciprocal. So that it's about the drafting of the policy directive. I think the answer was realized in that.
Yes, I think you've hit the nail on the head. The challenge is going to be how to draft that policy direction so that it achieves the objectives of government, but at the same time doesn't fall foul of the constitutional imperatives. But I think the harsh reality is that directive would have to be neutral. It would have to empower or authorize its CASA to invite people to apply for an electronic communications network service. It could, and it could not restrict who may apply for that license, nor may it specify. It would have to be a neutral invitation. But I don't think, I think we don't understand why that's problematic, because obviously Infoco would apply, and there's a strong prospect it would be granted a license. But at the same time, other people, whether they state-owned entities or private entities, are also able to apply, and ICASA may consider to grant a number of licenses and will consider them all equally on their merits, which we believe would be a good thing. It will then mean that InfoCo can get off the ground, but so can other people enter into the market, and we believe that would be pro-competitive and would in fact contribute to bringing prices down, promoting choice, promoting better services, because the competitors will be kept on their feet.
Sure, thank you. And to offer, let me just say I agree with my colleague in terms of what she said, and thank you for a very, I think, well thought through presentation. But I want to be naughty now, or play, I don't know if someone played devil's advocate, because Randy's eyes are going out every time he hears the word devil. And I don't try to think or to spoke on behalf of Eric or Peter or some of our colleagues there, but I want to submit the following little, well, argument or statement. If we're all in agreement about the intervention, the need for InfoCo to be there, to be licensed, and the objective, and it seems that we're all in agreement in terms of that, but we are stuck to a beauty contest. Now, it will be very difficult for me to think that after what we are going through here, and not get to some amendment, and ending up in a beauty contest sometime next year or over the next couple of months or whatever, with a clear indication that this whole thing is designed for InfoCo, even if it doesn't go through, it would mean that the whole cabinet and parliament and everybody's intentions are quite clear as far as this goes. And then you get to a point where invitation to apply is issued with guidelines that make it available for private entities also to apply, and eventually the license gets granted to InfoCo. But of course there will be this cloud of was ICASA in any event able to, in a free and fair way, on merit, take a decision, and one of the losers decide to take it to court, and we get into a court battle for 3, 4, 5 years, which is quite probable. And we all know the ease with which ICASA gets taken to court. My concern is then, and as I said, I'm thinking of that because just from your point of view, if you agree with the objective of getting InfoCo license for the purposes that we all agree on, how big a problem would that be? Can we afford to be tied up in court for years?
No. It will be a beauty contest of a special type. That's the one I can participate in.
Yeah. See, I mean, like, it's just coming. It's a similar kind of question. I mean, why must we create a facade of an open, competitive process when we know in reality that this is really a closed budget? Because that's what it is. And the original act, I mean, when it was conceptualized in 2005, not cater for this possibility. So it is better that you create a separate process. And I take the argument about constitutionality, etc. We're going to have to get the legal people to look at that very carefully. I found that your presentation was interesting, but why must we create the impression that it's a fair process, an open process, when in reality we already know, if the minister winks her eyes, then we know that ICASA is going to have to issue this license for InfoCo, irrespective of what the quality of the other bids are. Why should we subject ourselves to that kind of a surface type of process? Why should we pass that kind of legislation?
Well, you're studying very harsh, and that's all the more obvious my point, that if this whole InfoCo thing ever turns into a
into a beauty contest, we will probably have a court case. But the question should rather be, you asked, why should we do that? I think the question should also be, on the other hand, or adding on to that, how can we do this? How can we get this what we want to do without impeding on the independent nature of the caste as envisioned in the constitution and various legislation? How can we go about to do this?
I'm afraid I haven't got an answer that you're going to like. I think that's a very real problem that you're facing. The one is the question of the potential that there is fair competition. So Infraco will be in the market competing with other players, and they must be licensed in the same manner, and they must, within a category of service, must be treated procedurally and substantively in a similar manner, precisely because they're competing with each other. But I think that the even more serious problem remains the problems I referred to concerning the constitutional issues. So I think our solution is saying, you know, you're between a rock and a hard place, and we're trying to find a solution to that.
Randy and Chris?
Chairman, there's two documents that we need to be very careful before we start to try and amend it. One is the Constitution, the second one is the ECA.
Yeah.
You know, and who said it? Anna, I think other than the, how many, 6-8 months that we were sitting here, I think we were busy with more than 18 months moving around and all of that, and I think we got in the right size and that all of that. I think it's within that we need to find our answers. And I think the answer is there, which I've raised earlier, is the well-crafted policy directives after consultation with cabinet. Of course, we try to take it away from a minister and then take it, you know, co-responsible with the cabinet and bring it back. So if it's been crafted properly, I think we can still come to the end result of an IFRACO. The possibility is, and I don't want to look ahead too far, there might be some other entities want to do the same. But what the least that we need to do, that I'm suggesting, is to look at amending the ECA. That must be the complete last resort. We've gone through all of that. I know we've amended the Constitution, but it's like you've done everything before you go to that. So just a comment in terms of that, say, first one. I think the answer is, if you look carefully and what we want to do, we could come out without amending the ESA. Let's talk more about it.
Thanks, Chair. I think for this bill to come to this committee, I would assume that the State Law Advisors Office has checked for any potential conflict with the Constitution, assuming that that's normal process, unless the State Law Advisor says otherwise. So that's one thing. And second thing is, I would agree with the presenter in terms of creating a public entity where it would have unfair advantage to compete with others. But what we're missing here is that we're not realizing, for one, Infraco was not created for competition. But then secondly, in this particular case, what we're referring to is potential future public entities. And where that also where I agree with the presenter, where we might have potential problem where you would see other entities where government holds minority shares but still considered as a public entity, where that might create unfair competition. And on that note, I would agree, I think, with Syntec's amendment perhaps to limit those public entities receiving unfair advantage in terms of those that majority owned by government, because they are used for strategic interventions. And then lastly, I think a question I want to check is it of their view that the state entities or state other entities of majority shareholders where it's owned by state, is it in their view that these entities should not enjoy privileged access in terms of providing strategic interventions to the market where the market has a prevalence of market failure?
If I can answer, first of all, or comment to respond to Randy's point about wanting to minimize amendments to the ECA, I think many players in the sector would support that. So, I mean, whilst we believe that the objectives could be met without amendment, we believe that as a compromise solution is to make it absolutely clear to the objectives, namely to try and obtain strategic ICT infrastructural investment. If that clarity needs to be provided, then we're saying make the amendment into the objective section. So it's a very minor amendment, as I expect, is just placing greater emphasis on a particular objective. Alexander, do you want to respond?
I will just respond to the tail end, where should government not get privileged treatment in terms of entering the market. For strategic purposes, I'll add that on. I think that would be counter to everything that the Electronic Communications Act was drafted to achieve, which was to put in place a level playing field where all parties in their license categories could compete with each other. I recall a speech given by Ndile at the time that he was still Director General at the Department of Communications, and that was along the lines that they had hoped to achieve universal communications for people in South Africa through Telkom, and in fact it has been achieved through the mobile operators, who were not given the monopoly opportunities that Telkom was. And I think that's quite a useful point, is that when governments intervene in the market forces, the unintended consequences can sometimes be quite large. It's sometimes better to wait and see what the market delivers before you intervene. I think we are, as Amanda said, quite keen, I think even myself in terms of where I'm sitting, on an InfraCo existing in giving us access to the infrastructure at wholesale prices. And I think there's none of the operators here want to gainsay that. What we are saying is that the bill in its current form, the way that it's drafted, goes far broader than InfraCo. It captures a number of other public entities into its net. And so that's the one area. You first got to limit the application of the bill in terms of who you want to target. And I think that what was pointed out early on is that the policy directions, if they're crafted well, can deliver on what you need without the need to amend the bill to the extent that the proposed amendments are. And as we said, if you were to amend the objectives of the Act slightly to include ICT infrastructure, when you read that in the context of Section 3, where the Minister has to look to the objectives in terms of the policy directions she can set to ICASA, that immediately starts to lend her the powers that she needs to do this. But of course, it has to be done in a way that doesn't run afoul of Section 192. I think you've caught Asmael's recent report around the Chapter 9 institutions, and specifically in what he had to say with ICASA, it's quite relevant in this context as well, that one has to be very careful in how government tries to achieve its objectives using an entity like ICASA. Because on the one hand, you're trying to set forward, you want to attract investment into South Africa, and one way to attract investment is to say there's a level playing field. But the minute you say that state entities or public entities are not subject to the same rules, immediately the question is, well, should we be investing in South Africa if we're not on the same level playing field with the entities with state shareholding? And bearing in mind that right now it's far less than what Centec has proposed, it's at 25%. Thank you.
If I may just say, in response to, I have great appreciation for what Randy says about not changing the ECA. There is, however, one little section you could repeal for me. It's the one I opposed when we did the Act, and that is 5 subsection 6. That is the one that says that in consideration of managed liberalisation, ICASA can't issue invitations for the big networks until the Minister has issued a policy directive. I opposed it then, and I still think it's the root of a lot of the trouble, because, of course, it's not true that market failure is your problem here. Your problem is policy failure, the exclusivity that was given to Telkom, and then the choice of a duopoly, and then the duopoly didn't happen. And so those are policy mistakes, and Dane Argue has said so. So that's the repeal I would welcome. But now, if I may just pick up Ms. Armstrong's last intervention there. I've said that I think their proposal is very elegant, that you simply put strategic intervention into the object of the Act. But let me ask her this. She said a little earlier that it is true that whatever is put into the policy direction will be very important. Now, what if we decide that it's better we put some of the considerations that we would hope the minister would put into a policy directive, if we build them into a section here? I'm thinking, for example, that what one is looking for is a network that will address infrastructure competition, that it should work on a wholesale basis, that it should, there should be open access, that the charges should be cost-oriented or cost-based. If we want to ensure that those things are part of the brief, that already narrows it down considerably to infra, right? But if we want to put some of that wording into that, then we can no longer, am I right, Amanda, then it would be clumsy to put it into the object. One would then have to put it into section 3 somewhere, isn't it? And Chair, just, you know, what's so interesting is that we did under the Act, for the first time, the value-added network services, the internet service providers, can build their own infrastructure. It was one of our big breakthroughs. And they are just waiting for ICASA to finish the regulations. Then they can start building. But if this starts happening, then it's not only the foreign investors who might be chores and might think twice. Some of our own local operators might now think, okay, maybe I won't build a network. Van die groot krokodil lê in wag vir my.
If I may answer that long question, I think our view would be to caution against trying to draft that detail into the statute. I think precisely because you want the statute to be a statute that is fluid and able to cater for all sorts of situations moving forward, particularly given that we're in a sector that moves so fast, we believe it would be better to put that kind of detail and the objectives into the ministerial directive rather than in the statute itself. And if the directive is setting out the objectives one is wanting to meet, that will obviously give some guidance to ICASA when it comes to license future electronic communications network services.
I'm okay. We are moving. Maybe let's get another one and move back.
Thanks very much. Any closing remarks, or have you given us this indication of your position? Karen?
Chair, just firstly to say thank you to the committee for this opportunity to present you. I hope that we've demonstrated that we appreciate your difficulties and we've tried to come with a solution. And I hope that's been helpful to the members. Thank you.
Thanks very much. We're going to move on to the next one. It's Internet Service Providers and Gateway Communication. It's one presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just for the point of clarity, Chair, the presentation is presented by the Internet Service Providers Association. As with other members in the room, Gateway happens to be a member of it, so that this presentation is presented by it on behalf of the association as a whole. Not any individual members concerned. There was a slight misunderstanding between the committee secretary and myself on that. At the outset, maybe in response to some of the questions that have been raised previously, and before I actually get into the presentation, and we have the advantage, Chair, of not having a projector, so we don't need to worry about power corrupting and PowerPoint corrupting, absolutely. Possibly the most elegant solution, considering that my understanding from media reports in the process around InfraCo has been so vague and obtuse, is that they would be looking at obtaining some of the network of Eskom Telecommunications and Transcell Telecommunications. And in that circumstance, if they were to acquire network from one or both of those entities, they would in the same transaction be able to also acquire the license granted to both of those entities in terms of the 1996 Telecommunications Act, which continues to subsist in terms of the 2005 ECA, which is in the process of being converted in terms of the license conversion process. And we could obviate the need for all of this entirely if they were simply to take over one or both of those licenses through the proper license transfer process, which has been put in place under the 96 Act in terms of band licenses. But seeing as it mentions those two entities specifically, then ICASA may need to give some consideration as to how those sorts of licenses could be transferred. But there's no need to issue a new license. At worst, there would be the possibility of either or both EasyTel or Transtel needing to apply for a new license in the ordinary course for them to operate their own internal network, bearing in mind that in terms of the exemptions under the ECA, if you're running a network for your own purposes and you're not reselling spare capacity, you don't need a license. So there's a possibility of removing this entirely by simply taking over one of those two existing licenses. Before I get ahead of myself and before I deal with the question of unfair competition, which the Honourable Member raised himself, a little bit about ISPA. We were founded in June 1996 specifically to deal with issues of unfair competition. At last count, 142 members, 13 of which are large, 6 are medium, the vast majority of small and medium enterprises. Why I say at last count? Because we have an average of 2 or 3 members joining every month. Primarily, our members operate in the internet access business, so internet service providers, as they're commonly known. We also have affiliate membership for various other categories and various non-profits, such as the Tertiary Educational Institutions Network, TENET, eSchools Network, NetDate, SchoolNet South Africa, and various others. One of our fundamental concerns about the proposed amendment is the lack of context for the amendment in the documentation, which is also one of the significant criticisms of the ECA itself. No green paper, no white paper, no clear context. The memorandum talks about the forward-looking legislative framework, but the bill itself in all 5 lines of it is anything but forward-looking or a legislative framework. It amounts to a reversal of the separation of powers in the ECA and a parallel licensing mechanism. It seems to be inextricably linked with the broadband infra bill. It's what I've heard about continuously today, but yet it makes no reference to it, and understandably considering it causes autonomy. But that then opens the door for the possibility of an infinite number of interventions by the state. And my colleague referred to 6 entities. I've counted 5 public entities that currently play and, to all intents and purposes, dominate the network services market. And we've seen a dismal failure in terms of penetration and in terms of pricing. So we're now getting an additional public enterprise intervention, and with no certainty of any better prospects of success. One of my colleagues also raised the issue in terms of the proposed amendment being included in Section 5, which deals with licensing, making it clear that this is a parallel licensing process rather than in Section 3, which deals with the ministerial policies and policy directions. Our view is if we have to live with the evil, and it would appear that we are going to have to live with it, and we hope that it will achieve the laudable objectives that it set out to achieve, then it should be in Section 3. It should be subject to subsections 1, 3.1, 3.2, and 3.3 of the ECA. We did a quick comparison in terms of the objectives of the bill and the objectives of the Electronic Communications Act, and we found a couple of problems. Objective B, encouraging investment and innovation in the communications sector. I think it was Member Smith who said that this may very well put a dampener on the private sector's willingness to invest in infrastructure when they know they are getting a huge infrastructure player. Now, I hope that members from the ruling party won't take issue with me because I happen to agree with Member Smith on this. But it's one of our major concerns. Similarly, objective F, promoting competition within the ICT sector. We don't understand how licensing another public entity allows the private sector to compete on an equal footing. It's company uncomfortably reminiscent of the licensing under the 96 Act. We looked at Schedule 2 and Schedule 3 of the PFMA. At the 5 that I counted, Telkom, Transtel through into Neotel, obviously, Eskom through into Neotel, SABC and Centec, all of whom are public entities in terms of the PFMA. Obviously, there are a number of VANs who are also public entities in the PFMA, but I'm talking about dominant players, people who control fixed line infrastructure, people who control frequencies for wireless broadband rollout. At the moment, between those five, they control the market, and they've achieved very little. And our concern is licensing yet another public entity and opening the door for an infinite number of further public entities is of huge concern to us. Just a reminder, Schedule 2 of the PFMA says that any subsidiary or entity under the ownership control of any of the Schedule 2 entities is itself a major public entity. We looked at Section H, Objective H of the ECA, providing empowerment. That becomes a huge problem when a lot of the BBBE transactions that are taking place at the moment are based on growth, organic growth taking place between within operators in the sector. Now, if competition is taken out of the sector by licensing a dominant infrastructure provider, then the ability of operators to grow is significantly impeded, which means their ability to actually participate in empowerment structures becomes significantly impeded. Similarly, their ability to transform their organizational demographics in terms of empowerment, in terms of women, in terms of youth, and people with disabilities becomes significantly impeded. Objective J, clear allocation of roles and assignments of tasks between policy formulation and regulation within the sector. I don't think we even need to deal with that. One thing I've noticed is if I was a member of this committee, I would be offended. You inserted Section 4B into the ICASA Act, which deals with the question of investigations to be undertaken by the authority, including a market study. And here is a significant intervention that's been taking place without the authority having been given the opportunity of undertaking the investigation or market study that you've provided for, that you consider to be a good mechanism to consider what further interventions are necessary. If we then go on to K, which deals with diversity, both in the sense of broadcasting as well as electronic communication services. Again, I have to ask the question, how diverse is the industry when five and now potentially six of the largest players in the industry are all public entities? It makes a mockery of the question of diversity and the possibility of diversity. Y, which deals with refraining from undue influence, interference in commercial activities, and promoting stability in the ICT sector, all of those are of key objectives of the ECA which we feel have been contravened. To some extent, and this was described by somebody as a little bit like the Goldilocks story the other day, and that is, at the moment, if the intention of the amendment is to license InfraCo, then the amendment goes far too broadly. We don't need such a broad amendment in order to license InfraCo. I think there are other simpler, more elegant mechanisms, whether it's Armstrong's proposal or my earlier suggestion, if I'm correct, about taking over, transferring licenses from existing operators. I think there are better ways of licensing InfraCo. So, like Goldilocks, the cherry is too hard. If, on the other hand, the intention is to change the absolute makeup of the electronic communication sector in the country, then by restricting the intervention, both in terms of licensing as well as funding, to public entities only, is far too narrow. Then we need to let the authority go through the 4B investigation and market study and look at restructuring the market totally. So then the cherry is too soft. I'm encouraging this committee to look at a middle road. So if all we're doing is licensing InfraCo, let's find a mechanism that just licenses InfraCo. If we're planning on changing the entire makeup of the electronic communications market in the country, then let's go through a proper lengthy process, because that's not something that should be undertaken lightly with one afternoon of committee hearings. And again, Chair, just to thank you very much for accommodating us in this afternoon of hearings. But there needs to be more discussion, and there needs to be a more fully considered process in that regard. I think, Chair, I'll leave it over there so as not to consume too much time. What I would suggest is whether this is an intervention
relating to InfraCo more broadly is there need to be certain key restrictions which ISPA doesn't see as currently existing within the proposed amendment or in the broadband InfraCo bill. And that is, if the intention is to license a wholesale provider, then it should be absolutely clear, and the policy directions given to ICASA or the application made, however the process happens, should be for an electronic communications network service. There should be no electronic communications service license applied for, because they're only going to be wholesaling. And their intervention in the market should be limited to the wholesale market. They shouldn't deal with consumers. I don't see that restriction. But similarly, I think that a declaration, a preemptive declaration of facilities as essential facilities in terms of Section 43(8) of the ECA would be very useful for the market to know and trust that facilities are not going to be rolled out and that public money is not going to be used to build a monopoly or another attempt at a monopoly provider, but rather a true intervention in the sector. Similarly, I think that it would be very useful for the market to know that the provisions of Section 44(7) of the ECA, which deal with rollout of new fiber and which allow for a person rolling out new fiber to claim monopoly access to that fiber for a period of time and for that fiber not to be included within the scope of facilities that can be compelled to be leased. Again, I would suggest that that section shouldn't apply to an entity that is given some sort of preference in its licensing mechanism, because it's only by removing those open competitive mechanisms that we can expect an unfair advantage in the licensing process to achieve a fairer market within the infrastructure market. I think, Chair, other than to maybe indicate, as some of my colleagues have as well, the definition of public entity in the PFMA is an extremely broad definition, and it certainly is appropriately broad for an act like the Public Finance Management Act. But the definition of public entity in the PFMA is not necessarily appropriate to be inserted in this act, where one particular entity is intended to get a preference to achieve a specific intervention. And now we open the door for any number of potential, an almost infinite number of potential new licensees and interventions, given that public entities could be both provincial and national in scope. So I would really encourage that we try and find a creative mechanism to limit the amendments to those absolutely strictly and essentially necessary to achieve the purposes required, so that we can try and limit any unwarranted fallout that amending the ECA could apply.
Thank you very much to Mr. Silver. I don't think we've heard him for some time, and it was good to hear him again. What you just said about the conversion of the old EasyTel and what the other one, Transcell licenses, is now an entirely new thought to me. Is it possible, Chair, to ask the ICASA councillors who are present, if they wish, to respond to what the possibilities are of such a thing? Because it's true, ICASA has also embarked on the conversion process. If there's scope there, then problem solved. Perhaps ICASA wants to come back later, but if they want to have a stab at it now, then the problem is solved.
No, sir, I think that the input is okay. I think it also put emphasis on the definition of the public entity. It's not adding anything new from the previous one. It's one error we need to consider.
You don't have to ask the question. The presentation is clear.
No, you're right. The question is, how do you, whatever you insert, how do you draw something that is very specific around EFRCO? But looking forward to, I think what we also want, or the sector at least wants, is
a kind of predictability. Going into the future, that's what you want, kind of. Isn't it can be, that might be the end of all of us. When we drafted the ECA, many of us didn't even think of the IFRACO. How do we make sure we draft something clear, that we don't need to come and have to amend this ECA every second year? But gives it enough space that if an idea comes up, you know, or need comes up again in 2 years' time, it can be accommodated without amending the ECA. I think that knows where is what we need to look at.
If I could respond through you, Chair, I think that's a very encouraging sentiment for us. I personally see a couple of options. Obviously, they need to be debated and ventilated a little more, and I think that to some extent an apology is owed to this committee that the discussion and the ventilation is only taking place now and it hasn't been fully discussed and debated through the authority and elsewhere previously. The one thing that I could see, and there was some debate, and Chair, you raised it in terms of a so-called beauty contest. Now, the ECA does indicate an application, and it indicates a process. It certainly doesn't indicate a beauty parade. And as we know, beauty contests or beauty parade licensing application processes are not the only ways of issuing licenses. There are other ways. Now, I'm not going to presume to determine for the authority how they best want to issue licenses or what process is best for them, but I certainly think that we could look at other options other than a pure beauty contest in terms of issuing licenses. I certainly think we could look at license conversion, as I raised earlier, and I'd be very interested to hear a response from ICASA on that. And I think there may be other alternatives where we can either remove the need to amend the ECA or restrict the amendment to a specific amendment to cater for this situation, which hopefully doesn't occur again. Because if we're having to make a strategic intervention in the industry every year or two, then the authority is not being allowed to do its job. And we as market participants and our members who participate in the market aren't being allowed to do our job. Just as soon as competition gets going, the state intervenes again. And I think that there is some sort of middle ground. I've thrown out a couple of suggestions, and I think that ISPA would welcome the opportunity to discuss and debate further. In terms of what the best way is and how we avoid amending the ECA in the future, unfortunately, that is up to this committee, which has the ownership and responsibility for that piece of legislation.
Yes, I'm told that tea and coffee is already outside. So shall we adjourn for 10 minutes? So, yes?
Chair, Society of South Africa, unfortunately, I have to be somewhere as soon as possible, and I'm not going to be able to stay until after tea and coffee. Is there any chance that we can allow my presentation? I was supposed to be at 3 o'clock. I will be brief, I promise you.
Okay. All right, now we'll be accommodated. So can we have your presentation immediately?
Yes.
And then we'll go for tea after then.
Yes, okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, I do appreciate your leniency in this way. I extend apologies from my comrades, our chairperson, Naresh Dudgy, who couldn't be here, and Glenn Thompson, who is the chairperson of the Working Group on Policy, who's, you know, arranged all the discussions and debates around this the submission and worded the submission itself. You know, they went to their fallback freedom fighter, myself, Alan Levine, as the past chairperson of ISOC relay. So it's really encouraging to see the way that these discussions are going, and it's also, I'm very proud to be, you know, looking at the agenda, representing what might be the only, you know, organization without vested interest in this group, the only civil society organization certainly in this group. Yes.
1 hour for your presentation now.
Yeah, so a little bit about us. We're, you know, we have over 800 members right now from all different walks of life in South Africa. We represent internet users and as consumers in these types of discussions as far as policy is concerned. We also do a lot of outreach to, you know, some of the 80% of our country who has never had an internet experience. We do a lot of work globally in standards and standards development, especially through the IETF, which is the Internet Engineering Task Force, establishes all the standards on which the internet is built. We have a global network of over 90 chapters around the world, and we do a lot of membership community events as well. There's education done on a global basis, and I can go on about that. So, yeah, we discussed this, and obviously we agree with objectives. The objectives are great. The problem is that the objectives have always been great. The linkages between the actions and you know, and the objectives are what we're concerned about. And we don't agree with the actions, the method, shall I say, of achieving those objectives. Specifically, you know, as everyone around here has said, the idea of you know, government-owned entities creating a competitive environment. I mean, on the back of that, I mean, we're very, very pleased with the number of entities here that are on the list, private companies and you know, state-owned enterprises or other types of enterprises, in that there's definitely, you know, a direction, a good direction here. In the last 2-3 years, we've noticed that all of a sudden the prices have started coming down as far as internet access is concerned. And we just need to stick to that path in order to ensure that the objectives that are stated here are actually realized. So a couple of other examples that I'd like to bring up that relate, I mean, the first one relates specifically to InfraCo. InfraCo made an announcement through the press somehow of the fact that they were going to bring down the cost of international access bandwidth by 10 to 20%. And you know, later on, a few months later, a consortium by the name of CECON made an announcement saying that we're going to bring down the prices of international connectivity by 80%. And soon thereafter, InfraCo came out and said, no, we'll bring this down by 85%. So, I mean, I think that's really just as an illustration of the fact that public-private, you've got to understand that a mix of both is going to be very, very valuable. And we have some significant concerns about the department putting a block on private enterprises trying to even get involved in this, even if it is private enterprises that are based entirely on foreign investment. We have no doubt that foreign investment in the sector is going to help build our economy. It might not have helped build our economy when the investment into telecom happened, but in a competitive environment, we know that it will. And that's what we're really looking for, is a much more competitive environment. So we're seeing the cost of telecoms coming down, and you know, in personal experience in having to deal with some of these competitors, I must say that the service levels aren't quite there yet. I mean, it's all very exploratory. And in some ways, I've become somewhat of a telecom fan, believe it or not, just from my experiences in dealing with some of their competitors. but that really, you know, poses the real challenge of universal access. And that's really something that we've been trying to pursue very aggressively over the past 10 years of our struggle in this area. Our experience of universal access has been a poor one, in that when we introduce people who have never seen or experienced the internet, they're really amazed, but then after the fact they turn around to us and, you know, scorn at us for showing them or introducing them to, you know, taking them for a drive in a Rolls Royce, in their own words, something which is totally out of their reach and availability. So how do we actually achieve this universal access? It really comes down to price and cost effectiveness, as well as, you know, reach. As soon as the prices come down and the cost effectiveness comes down and if competition is there, there's no doubt in my mind that we're going to achieve reach, and we're also going to achieve, you know, a lot of the goals as far as BEE is concerned. Certainly if we look at the experience in the past 10 years, I don't believe that we've necessarily achieved the goals that we need to achieve in that area either. So, why is the minister doing this? While we're all here debating this, I mean, the reasons that I had in mind, without necessarily reading the really eloquent stuff that's in our, you know, paper-based submission, and I really advise that you look at that. It's written much more eloquently than I could write. I'm not a lawyer or any of those types of professionals, but it struck me that, you know, there could be three reasons why the minister's issued doing this. Either it's power, and especially power over ICASA, and that, you know, I think that's undermining of their independence. And I'm very concerned if it's that reason. I personally don't think it's necessarily that reason. But it could be. And if that's the case, then I appeal to you to please don't allow it to happen. ICASA, as in the I in ICASA, is independent, and if they're going to be independent, we need to, you know, support them as much as we can. The other reason is to keep you guys busy, or us busy. And that's a very important one, because looking back at the times that I've been here, we've debated a number of different acts and amendments and so forth, and one of the ones that had a very big impact on our environment was the ECT Act of 2002. We're 5 years down the line on that one, and there's some really great things in there. And there's also a lot of things which are, you know, I'm not really sure about. We argued them at the time. They were left in, and I don't know where they've gone. Certainly I don't think that they've been achieved in any way. One of the areas in the ECT Act is a national ICT strategy, which seems to have very similar objectives to the objectives written in this bill. And there seems to be a delinkage there. So what is going on in the national ICT strategy, and why isn't it, know, achieving some of the objectives that are written into this bill? There's a whole bunch of others. I mean, one of the areas that we've been very concerned about is spam. Because spam's on the increase worldwide, it uses up 90% of the email resources on the internet. It's very, very serious. And we were here debating that during the ECT Act, and we're not very happy with that legislation, and we've got a bounty hunter program happening, and yet there is absolutely no legal precedent in the area of spam. So, you know, I've got a list here of about another dozen, well, at least half a dozen items that need to be reviewed in the ECT Act if, you know, if you have a lack of things to keep you busy.
Yeah.
So that leaves me with the third possibility of why the minister is doing this. And I'm wrapping up now. Okay, so what's the third possibility of why the minister is doing this? And it's possibly why that she didn't know how or what else to do. And that seems to be, you know, based on the discussions around this room, the most probable reason why this came out in, you know, 1 year down the line. How are we going to get this InfraCo going? We know we need more competition, so let's write the bill. So please, don't feel bound to having to amend this bill if it's a bad idea. I appeal to you. If it's a good idea, then that's fine. But if it's a bad idea and the minister can just issue a policy directive, dwell on more important things. If we're going to build this economy and create jobs and create, you know, an information society and a, you know, knowledge economy, and we're going to become more globally competitive, it's not worth debating how to get InfraCo a license.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions?
Alan needs to go.
No, I really do want to answer questions or comments. That's also why,
But the interesting point is, the point is argued here that in fact costs could rise as a result of the creation of a new monopoly. And it's a very fundamental and serious point, and if it can be demonstrably argued, then it's a hang of an argument.
Okay, let's comment. Any other questions? Good. Shall we adjourn for coffee then? Yeah. We'll come back in 10 minutes' time.
One or two people have to leave quite urgently. Somebody has taken in. So they're asking that they come up front. So I'm going to move Ikasa up, and the NAD has kindly agreed to that, so they'll come up to it. The ANC is always last. Can you get the other ANC members in? Forget the visitors. Can you get the ANC members in? How are you? Are you right? Good. Presentation. You may take this just for the beautiful folder. Forget the content and the information, but it's all for you. Now, this is very good. If you can carry your file in here and all your notes in here, you may have one. All right, there's a request that we give Ikasa a chance now. They have to leave. And the NAB has agreed, so I'm going to call upon the Ikasa team to do the presentation.
Honorable Chairperson, Ikasa welcomes.
Is the mic on?
It's on.
Okay.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Ikasa welcomes the opportunity to make this presentation before you, the Honorable Members. Ikasa supports the general principles of the bill. Ikasa is geared to implementing the proposed amendment. ICASA is currently finalizing terms and conditions contemplated in Chapter 3 of the ECA Act, which will apply to all converted and new licensees. ICASA recommends that the definition of a public entity be inserted in Section 1 of the ECA Act, and in defining public entity, related definitions be inserted to add clarity, specifically with regard to Section 31H, which refers to state-owned enterprises, and Section 53B, which refers to state entities. ICASA cautions against potential duplication of the licensing framework and processes envisaged by the ECF. ICASA seeks clarity on the licensing framework applicable to state entities which hold an ownership interest which is greater than 25% of the share capital. ICASA proposes that The licensing framework contemplated in the bill to be placed in Chapter 2 of the EC Act. That new provisions be made in Section 3 of the EC Act to give the Minister powers contemplated in the bill. Section 5, 6, and Section 9, 1, 9, 2, A, and B be amended to exclude ECMS contemplated in the bill from a competitive licensing process. ICASA further proposes the following additional principles for consideration. That the strategic infrastructure intervention by the public entity be for wholesale services. That the services be provided on a non-discriminatory basis. That access to network elements be provided on a cost orientation basis. And that possible conditions to facilitate the above include requirements for regulatory financial accounting, requirements for appropriate methodology in the provision of services. In conclusion, Honourable Members, ICASA believes that the proposed bill may provide an opportunity to contribute towards long-anticipated cost reduction of communication services, and that competition at the wholesale level brings hope and possibilities for infrastructure competition in the ICT market. Thank you.
Thank you very much for a very brief and tight presentation. Question?
May I just ask Dr. Sikikwa, did you just say that you would propose an amendment to 9.2 in order to avoid abuse funding? Is that what you said? And would you just speak to that a little bit? And let me just say that I do remember, whatever we do must be done so carefully. If you recall, in the old Telecoms Act, there was a little clause that was supposed to cater for circumstances other than strat duty contests, where incidentally there isn't just a queen and two princesses, I mean a number of licenses can be issued. But in the old Telecoms Act, we had that funny little section which made it possible to auction cellular licenses, auction the frequencies. You remember, it was after that time when the frequency licenses got a spectacular amount in Europe, which they've since regretted. It was a really badly, loosely drafted section, and the next thing we knew, that was its intention, to cater for auctioning and so forth. The next thing we knew, the minister was using it to license, who was it? Chelsea. It was one of the highly contested. The next thing we knew, a thing must be properly drafted and crafted. This thing was very sloppily done. And in the end, it was used not for what it was intended to cover. So if that's what Dr. Sikikwa is saying, but she will please expand on what she said.
The reference to 9.2a and b relates to the thresholds for HDI vis-à-vis the public state entity. And again, reference to 9.2a relates to the ITA and the criteria set out in the bill, i.e. Reduction of costs and so forth.
Thank you, Chair. Can I just get clarification on your submission? You said the CASAR is you mentioned a contradiction where the Act provides uniform licensing framework for all applicants, and yet the bill describes a different framework for public entities. Now, given that statement and what you're saying is and given that statement, if you look at the aim of the bill, the aim of the bill is actually just to address a special framework for public entity. Now, given, let's just put aside whether that intention is good or bad, is it correct or not, or the fact that we are addressing this, this idea, the special framework for public entities, would this amendment be the correct way to go, or would there be other recommending options to address a particular intention?
What we are suggesting is, in order to limit duplication, that you rather look at Section 3 and not at the at Chapter 3, which addresses the licensing framework. And the licensing framework set out in Chapter 3 is sufficiently complex. And working in the licensing portfolio in ICASA, one experiences these complexities on a daily basis. And we think this intervention is best placed in Section 3. We're working whilst we're looking at thinking about solutions to where should we place in Section 3. And we were looking at Section 3 in the EC Act in Chapter 2. And this, I think perhaps just to illustrate what how we interpret this is Section 3.3 reads, no policy made by the Minister in terms of subsection 1 or policy direction issued by the Minister in terms of subsection 2 may be made or issued regarding the granting, amendment, transfer, renewal, suspension, or revocation of a license. And then there's that phrase, except as permitted in terms of this Act. And we thought, rather, we have not come to any conclusion, but we were thinking perhaps the insertion to should take place there. So, and we are thinking, for example, that you could say, except to the extent a strategic intervention enables a reduction of costs. And of course, to the extent that it is that this imperative is supported by Cabinet.
Question? Now, is the response permitted? I mean, we obviously have to think through this, but but that seems to me, Dr. Skikwa, to come right back to every problem that is in the amendment bill before us now. It seems to me you're then actually building that into the ECIS on a permanent basis and in arguably the worst possible place in the ECA.
Chair, with reference to the earlier presentations, Mike, talk about the possible transfer of the license, I couldn't really see the CASA coming back at some stage to us, or would now be the opportune time for them to make remarks as to the possibility of transfer and unused license through conversion to InfraCo.
Chairperson, thank you. The acting chairperson will deal with the conversion issues, but just so that it's clear, we did have this discussion in an earlier process with DPE on the possibility of transfer or using their current license, PTN license, in the conversion. The response that I think still remains was that they require that license for mission critical activities for Transnet, and we're not looking to risk anything in regard to that. They might clarify that position here, but that's where the matter was left after it was discussed at that level.
Would that
be
mission critical?
I didn't hear that also.
Jargon. Essentially, for the purposes for which the PTN was granted in the first place, for the activities essential to running the transport network telecoms over which they would be using it for. So the original PTN license remains important to their core activities, and they weren't wanting to transfer it over.
Just to respond to the conversion, the EC Act only permits ICASA to convert existing licenses. InfraCo has no such license. It's not regarded as InfraCo's license. You cannot be in InfraCo to have a license simply because Transcell and Etitel have a license.
Chair, I thought the basis of Mr. Silver's argument was that they were taking over the everything. I mean, it was access. I thought that was the very basis of his argument, but he may wish to agree.
This discussion took place on several different occasions, and we could not establish whether InfraCo is taking on Etitel and Transcell's license. And from where we sit, we don't think that is indeed the case.
Maybe they must read the intraco, because they are taking the assets, not the licenses, because they want their licenses to continue providing whatever they are doing currently for communication within and so on. Only the assets which are being some sales are going to be sold to Infraco, but they need their licenses, so it won't be possible to do what is suggested.
Just to add, in fact, Eskom and I think it's Transnet, in fact, approached the authority during the license conversion hearings, and they, based on their presentation, still want a license.
Right, so they're not prepared to transfer the license to another entity. All right, are there no further questions to you, Kasa? Everyone, something to say?
Just to add clarity, while we argue, you cannot place this intervention, strategic intervention, in the licensing framework as set out in Chapter 3. If you see, from maneuver Chapter 3, there are a whole lot of other maneuverings you're going to have to make in the rest of the Act. And I'm not certain if that is, if you have the time frame nor the interest to do that. And we therefore urge you to consider placing in Section 3, where the ministerial powers are defined.
Thank you very much. Can we then have the National Association of Broadcasters, Mr. Costa?
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Member. I think the NAB's presentation is going to be very much along the lines of what you've heard thus far. There are not going to be any new revelations coming from our side. But I think for the sake of clarity, maybe it is a good idea to go through our position again so that the members have an opportunity to interrogate that. Just quickly on the NAB chair, the NAB is a representative body of the South African broadcasting industry, and our members include all the commercial broadcasters, the SABC. Commercial broadcasters, by commercial broadcasters we mean both in radio and television, including NNET, ETV and DSTV. We also represent both the common carrier and the selective and preferential carrier licensed signal distributors, and many community radio services, and also a community television broadcaster. I think the NAB's aim is to further the interests of the broadcasting industry by contributing to its development, and we certainly also strive towards a fair and predictable broadcasting and ICT environment. See, I think our presentation is very brief, and there are three main concerns, all of which you've heard already today, and those include the constitutional problems with the proposed amendment, also the broadness of the definition of public entity, and then also the contradictions that are created with this proposed amendment with the existing legislation in the EC Act and the ICASA Act. Maybe if I first could just quickly deal with the constitutionality issue. I think the NAB's view that the insertion of 13B allows the minister to issue policy direction after obtaining a cabinet approval to provide policy framework for licensing a public entity. As I've said, the public entity is so broadly defined that it would include other broadcasting services or services essential in the broadcasting industry, such as the SABC and Centec. Now, this insertion basically grants the executive direct power to deal with licensing issues, whether through the SABC or Centec, or in introducing any new entity into the broadcasting environment. And we believe that's a direct infringement on Section 192 of the Constitution. because Section 192 obviously provides for an independent authority to regulate broadcast. So, in our view, our interpretation of the bill is that it essentially removes the jurisdiction conferred by the Constitution and Parliament on ICASA and allows the Minister to exercise that jurisdiction. And therefore this incision would be unconstitutional, especially in relation to the broadcasting arena. Chair, you've already heard the previous presenters dealing with Section 3, Sub 3 of the ICASA Act, where it says the authority is independent and subject only to the Constitution and law and must be impartial and must perform its functions without fear, favour and prejudice. I'm not going to go into that again in detail, apart from saying that it's our view that the proposed amendment empowers the Minister to direct ICASA to issue a license, and that there is no provision for ICASA to actually refuse such a license. The amendment does not envisage a process of ICASA refusing a license if they deem Infraco or any other public entity of not being capable of performing that service. And I think here the argument we want to make is that we should not forget that the ICT sector is a regulated sector for a reason. There's a reason why we have an independent regulator. There's a reason why we have legislation in place to govern access to this industry. And there's a reason why we have what we call this beauty pageant process of licensing. The process is designed to ensure that the ICASA can identify strengths and weaknesses within applicants. And in issuing a license, they are assured that an applicant who is then granted a license has the ability to actually meet the objectives of the Act and actually can meet the requirements of competition and market forces and ensure that the public benefits from this. Because at the end of the day, ICASA regulates in the public interest. And I think this is our main concern, is that any entity wishing to enter this market has to jump through a number of hoops in order to access this or deliver a service to the public. If we are now saying that a new entity is entering the market and they're not going to jump through those hoops, what security does the public have that they're actually going to deliver on their promises and that they're actually going to meet the objectives of the legislation and that they will be delivering? We've heard that we already have 5 public entities who are delivering these services with very little success. So what guarantees have we got with this new entity? And that's why ICASA is there, to make sure that these guarantees are in place and that the public interest is protected. And in the broadcasting industry specifically, it's been a major advantage is that broadcasters have to jump through these hoops in order to get a license and to ensure that the service that is rendered to the public is of good quality and meet these objectives. And we would hate to see an amendment to the legislation that now extends unintendedly, but goes beyond the intention of dealing with Infraco specifically. Other than that, we think the ECA deals with licensing new entities adequately. We don't necessarily think going through this beauty contest is a bad thing. We understand and we realize that there is a need for strategic intervention. But the ECA already speaks about strategic intervention, and it already speaks about developing the ICT sector, and it already has the consumer's interest at heart when it comes to pricing and making sure that there's a reasonable price. And if you look at the objects of the Act, M and N, both of them, Section 2 or Chapter 1, Sub M and N, both talk about pricing to the consumer and making sure that the services are rendered at a reasonable price. So I think, Chair, I would like to conclude there by saying that we should not forget why there is an ICASA in the first place and why access to this industry is regulated in the first place. And I would concur with the presentation that Emmett made earlier. You are between a rock and a hard place, unfortunately, in the sense that you're trying to fast-track the licensing of a new entity. But if you give any entity special treatment, you're probably going to find litigation against ICASA. If you if you don't give them special treatment, as Honourable Member Peterson raised earlier, if one gets licensed and the other not, you're going to get litigation against ICASA, which happens in any case. And you also, if you change this to have possible constitutional problems, you're going to find litigation on a constitutional level. So whichever way you look at it, it is a rock and a hard place. But I think the imperatives and the objectives of the EC should not be forgotten, and the reason why we have an ICASA should not be forgotten. Thank you, Chair.
Question? Comment?
Just to say, I mean, well spoken to Mr. Gupta for saying the basic, simple things. Let's remind ourselves that you have regulations to compensate for an absence of competition, and as soon as there's enough competition, the regulation can cease. And even in the case of frequency, but let's not get into that argument. But I thought you spoke well, and I...
Agreed. Can we move on? Thank you very much. Vodacom, Mr. Pangwana.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. I'm accompanied by Amanda Kropla, who's going to make the presentation, and Willington Weber, who are just behind me. I must at the outset, Chairperson, just point out a few things for the presentation. One is the fact that fundamentally we're driving one point about where this amendment should go. But on the other hand, I just want to indicate that In the building of the EC Act, there was sense in the various provisions. If you look at Chapter 3 addresses policy direction by the Minister addressing whatever may be perceived as a failure in the sector or needs strategic intervention. Then Section 5 deals with the licensing framework and puts that squarely in the domain of ICASA to actually deal with it efficiently. And there's another interesting chapter in the EC Act called Chapter 10, which was specifically designed to address whatever may be perceived as a failure in the sector. And presently, I mean, Dr. Cohen at ICASA has done selling work, not only in doing market reviews, but also if ICASA would be given leeway, they would point out some of the shortcomings of the very same act that are constraining ICASA in some of the things that they want to do to address that competitiveness. If this amendment was specifically designed to address what would possibly be addressed by Infraco, it is still debatable, but that horse has bolted. But it is still debatable whether Infraco would really be able to do that. And in our view, perhaps the very same well is called beauty contest. A beauty contest doesn't necessarily say it has to be one player that gets licensed. We have had that history in the sector where we would issue an invitation to apply for one license. As a result, a number of players apply for the license, and then if they lose, too bad. But ICASA has actually proved in this year, where they've licensed how many, four other players in subscription broadcasting. Through the very same, I would call it a beauty contest, where players prove that they can do what they say they are going to do, and as a result get licensed. If Infraco in the process of an invitation to apply, if that's the purpose of the amendment, then there is no reason why an invitation, and out of the reasons for the licensing of Infraco, it is seen that there is a problem in electronic communication network services rollout. Then license five players, five new players. let them prove through a prisoner's case that they can do what they say they can do, and let them all get lighter. I'll hand over to Amanda to do a presentation for Vodacom. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Fakamili. Excuse my voice, I've got a bit of a cold today. Before I start, I'd like to note that Vodacom will not go into any detail in respect of the licensing of Infraco in our presentation, but will in essence discuss Vodacom's views in respect of the proposed amendments of the EC Act. Similar to other views that was expressed today, Vodacom is of the view that the draft amendments to Section 1 and 5 of the Electronic Communications Act are vaguely drafted and superfluous, as the provisions of the EC Act is adequate. Since the municipality issue policy directions is already the subject of Section 3 of the EC Act, we believe that the proposed amendments do not add to or take away from the existing provisions of the EC Act, in that ICASA nevertheless has to comply with all the provisions of the EC Act when licensing and intervening. Vodacom's primary concern on this bill is that the insertion of the proposed amendment under Section 5 of the EC Act will circumvent the existing provisions of Sections 3.3 to 3.9 in respect of the ministerial policy or policy directions and result in conflicting interpretations of the existing provisions. It is Vodacom's view that the inclusion of the proposed provisions under Section 5 of the Act would detract from both the policy and licensing framework already in place, and this could cause unnecessary delays in the existing licensing process. Vodacom contends that the provisions set out under 3.3 to 3.9 are included with the express purpose of ensuring due process and the independence of the regulatory authority. Any amendments that explicitly or implicitly seek to circumvent such safeguards cannot be considered to serve the best interests of a robust legislative and regulatory regime of the sector. Vodacom therefore strongly recommends that the proposed amendments, if included at all, should be inserted under Section 3 of the EC Act, which deals specifically with ministerial policy and policy directions, and not under Section 5 of the EC Act, which deals with licensing. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anything else?
Now, thank you, Chairperson. That's our presentation. We'll take questions.
Here, thank you very much for a clear presentation. It might be that it's the clarity of the presentation or that people are getting tired. No, you're not getting tired, eh? That's good. Thank you very much for the clear presentation. Thanks very much. We've had the tea break already. Internet solutions. Internet solutions. Who's that? Thank you, Mr. Magidi.
Can you project me? You can see the fact that I'm not a senior citizen does not mean I'm a believer.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, if I could just start by introducing ourselves. My name is Siyabonga Magibi. I'm from a company called Internet Solutions. We are a division of Dimension Data, and I'm responsible at Internet Solutions for regulatory affairs. Sitting next to me is Elijah Maseko. He's one of the executives in one of the companies that are a division of Dimension Data, and the company is known as Plessy. I think together today we'll represent Dimension Data as a group. If I could just start here by saying that we would like to thank the Preferred Committee for the opportunity to make the presentation today. We believe that this is the culmination of a long and a tortuous road, which for us began with the licensing of the second national operator. And we also want to put it on record that we agree with the notion of access to affordable telecommunications, costs, and infrastructure as being crucial for economic growth. We also share the view that competition is the biggest driver in bringing down the cost of connectivity for consumers. However, it is also our view that competition can only thrive in a policy environment that takes into account local market conditions. It is our view that in South Africa, if you look at local market conditions, those conditions speak to one area where there's market failure, and that area is the area of infrastructure provisioning. It is our view, therefore, that any intervention that is being made or proposed by the minister must address the areas of the market where there's a clear market failure, and therefore we need for a strategic intervention. Chair, I must say, therefore, that we align ourselves closely with the sentiment that was expressed by Centec earlier on, and that is to the effect that we believe that whilst this may not necessarily be the best process of trying to attain government strategic objectives, it has gone this far, and we believe, therefore, that the government is quite serious about it, and I suspect that despite many protestations that will be coming up from civil authorities, this process will continue. And therefore, we will not really address ourselves in terms of what our objectives and how the process is being managed, but rather I think what we're going to try and do is make submissions on how the process can be managed so that going forward, it best delivers on its promise. We were therefore encouraged when you noted, Chair, that one of the motivating factors for the minister to make this intervention is because, according to the bill, she wants to encourage infrastructure investment. We must say, Chair, that before we go forward and applaud that initiative, we must look at what has happened in the past in terms of the minister's intervention in relation to infrastructure investment. And I think it has to be said, if we're going to be honest about the development of the sector, that there are two interventions, for instance, that were made that relate to infrastructure investment. The first one was the licensing of Telkom and giving Telkom a 5-year exclusivity period, which allowed them to operate in the market exclusively, especially in the infrastructure sector of the market. This was designed to ensure that Telkom rolls out a national network and that the country therefore benefits from that national network. However, I think we will all know the results of that process. Out of more than 2 million lines that were rolled out by Telkom in 200 service areas, we know that about 70% of those lines have since been disconnected. And we also know that the reason for disconnection is related primarily to the issue of affordability. And we're saying, therefore, if the minister is proposing another way forward that delays infrastructure investment, we must be mindful of the past mistakes that have been made. And those mistakes must not be repeated as part of this process. We're also aware, for instance, that some of the interventions that were made in infrastructure investment, for instance, through the licensing of Centec, did not have the desired effect that they were supposed to have in the market for various reasons, Chair. And again, we're saying that the Centec experience must again inform us in terms of how we proceed forward with this process. So I think what we really want to say, Chair, to the committee today is that if you look at our market right now, the services layer of the market is thriving. That's where the competition is. You look at the operators that operate at the services level of the market. I think that from only the vendor's perspective, which are service providers, we have more than 300 of them, currently licensed to provide services. And if you zoom down to the big operators, we have recently about 10 or more than 10 that are operating at the services level that are licensed to operate at that level. So I think clearly the problem is not at the services level. The services continue to be too expensive. The services continue to be largely restricted to metropolitan areas. And again, there's a simple reason for that, Chair. The reason is because at an infrastructure layer of the market, there is a bottleneck. And that bottleneck relates to the fact that only Telkom is effectively the infrastructure provider in the country. And the reason that services, although they are competitive, remain high from a cost perspective is because everybody has to acquire their facilities from Telkom. And Telkom being the monopoly that they are, or the de facto monopoly that they are, they do not give those their facilities at prices that are competitive. It's a very monopolistic prices. We therefore say, Chair, therefore, if this intervention that is being proposed through Infraco has to be strategic, it must essentially address the infrastructure of the layer of the market and not the services layer of the market. We're saying, Chair, that infrastructure, what therefore concerns us is one of the things, for instance, that has made Telkom to be able to make the kind of super profits that they're able to make today is the fact that they're a vertically integrated company. They operate both at service level and they operate both at infrastructure level. And as a result, they've got no incentive to give competitive prices when it comes to the infrastructure side of their business. As a result, everybody else has to increase their services or the cost of their services, taking into account how much they have to pay for facilities. And we've noted with concern when you look at the impact of this, which we believe is the primary driver of this amendment. We've noted with concern the fact that Infraco is not designed currently to be a purely infrastructure provider. If you look at the Infraco bill, it speaks of Infraco providing infrastructure services, but it also speaks of Infraco providing services to end users. And we believe that, again, what you're going to be doing if you allow Infraco to go currently in its form, you're creating another vertically integrated company. And we will fail dismally to have learned the lessons of what vertical integrated companies can do in the market. Telcom is a selling example of what vertical integrated market companies can do in the market. And if you license Infraco as both a services provider and an infrastructure provider, you're doing and repeating those very same mistakes. You're creating another monster that is going to increase their facilities prices because they want to compete at services level with the very same people that they give those facilities to. And we're saying that this committee must be mindful of that. It must not allow a situation where that mistake is made again. We therefore support the view that if you allow this amendment to go through, that must happen in terms of Chapter 3. Chapter 3 is where you allow the minister to create a policy framework. And we are saying that the minister must be dictated to, that policy framework must speak to the issue that Infraco would be restricted from being a vertically integrated company. If you create a policy environment, minister, you must create a policy environment that allows Infraco to come in almost as a common carrier in the market, a common carrier, a carrier that will be designed to service other operators, to free up the bottleneck, which is the infrastructure level of the market, to make sure that when operators go to the market, they take services that are affordable, because the infrastructure part of those services is a competitive one, is one where they can get facilities at cost, is one where they can get facilities from an operator that they don't have to compete with downstream. So I think, therefore, the gist of our presentation today is to say that for the umpteenth time, this country and this committee has an opportunity to address the big, big, big ill in the market, and that ill relates to infrastructure competition. ICASA is currently conducting a process of increasing the number of operators that can provide infrastructure services. For instance, certain vans are being noted or being considered for infrastructure licenses. But the reality of the market says that in the next 4 to 5 years, only those companies that have got a backbone infrastructure are going to be able to really provide infrastructure services. You can license 10 or 20 vans tomorrow. Those vans, from an infrastructure perspective, will take a significant amount of time to be able to become real competitors to the likes of Telcom. In the telecom sector, the network that you have on the ground gives you a better game to the guy who's got the same license as yours, but does not have the same network on the ground as you. That is why there's a concept in telecoms that they call natural monopoly, and that is exactly what telecom is benefiting from today. We're therefore saying that if these amendments go through, the committee must be mindful of the mistakes that were made in the past, and those mistakes must not be made again through Infraco. And the committee has got an opportunity to ensure that does not happen. Thank you, Chair. That's the gist of our submission.
Thanks very much.
Good. Before my question is directed to DOC, given that input, but before that, I'd just like to, I think, on that particular input of where vertical integration does, and it seems to be a worry amongst other presenters, the fact that the thing's been covered in Infraco Bill and also it's been covered by the mandate from the minister to, as a shareholder to the company, where Infraco is only allowed to provide access to wholesalers and services. And I think there are other reasons why they were easier and as that provided to the company. But that aside, I think my question is on this thing on your worry on competition with the private sector and as with other presenters, it's rested on this clause where the minister may issue these the minister after consult with cabinet may issue the policy directives. Now my question to DOC is perhaps we can the possibility of changing that clause not only include the cabinet, because what we imply here now is single ministers are making decisions, which is not true, because the the decision will come actually come from the cabinet. Perhaps not only include cabinet but also include parliament. I don't know how feasible that is. And also the last issue is providing if you look at the clause here, the presenters are worried about the fact that you open an infinite door to other public entities where are not majority owned by government. So my proposal is to deal with what is the possibility of limiting those to majority owned by government. And if these entities in future get privatized in future or any way sold off to less of a certain percentage, then the condition of the license being restored, then that should take care of the worry that the license might be granted now and then maybe later on the entities privatized for private sector's advantage.
But I don't know if you want to respond right now, or we can hold it for later.
Thanks, Chair. Maybe let me just respond, because I don't think it's going to be a long response, because currently the understanding is that the bill is in front of Parliament. It's no longer a GOC bill, so it's within the powers of Parliament to take the bill that has been presented to them.
We can change what we want to change. Okay. Any other questions? Jean?
Yeah, but now I listen to Chiamongo with interest always. It is, of course, you said that, believe it or not, it's Infraco that has broken through this lack of infrastructure competition, and of course it's not a case of believe it or not. I mean, I think that minister did this thing because there is this lack of infrastructure competition, and quite frankly one of the bottlenecks is section 5 sub 6 in the ECA, the thing that I do so wish you would repeal, because everybody has to sit around and wait for policy directions from this minister before ICASA can issue invitations to apply, before anyone can build big networks. And as you have so well analyzed, we need big networks. And you've also made a very eloquent case for why this thing must be wholesale, can't go to end users, and so forth. I'm quite curious to know, since IS is one of our really big internet service providers, will you be, and you said a minute ago, anybody needs backbone, your vans and ISPs can build a lot of infrastructure, but you still need backbone. And without now divulging all of your business plans and so forth, can I assume that you would be in favor of a beauty contest in which multiple licenses might become available, multiple licenses? Yes, okay, because one would like to see IS building networks.
Maybe just in responding to that, just to think, for us, if you look at the broadcasting side of the business and you look at the role that Zentech has played as a common carrier, we believe that tremendous progress has been made from the broadcasting sector, mainly because there was an entity that was positioned in the same way as Zentech was, as a common carrier, which basically allows even your smallest community radio guys to be able to actually go on air and support and to support their communities without having to build a network themselves. Because we know that the most expensive part in taking a service to the market always has to relate to building the network that enables you to take that service. And we're saying, when you look at the telecom side, a model similar to that would indeed be very desirable, because what that would do, it would create vigorous competition at the infrastructure level. And you know that from a telecoms perspective, one of the biggest investments we have to make in order to be able to take services to the market is infrastructure. And we're saying that if the minister has found it necessary to make a strategic intervention that is based on infrastructure investment, that does not be an exclusive area that is given only to certain public entities. Why don't you allow that space for other, even private sector related institutions to come in and say that I'm prepared to be a carrier as well, or I'm prepared to be a common carrier as well, I'm prepared to supply infrastructure services on a non-exclusive basis, and I've got no interest of competing with you when it comes to end users. I think that model would work and would will do wonders in terms of actually lowering the cost of communication, which is exactly the intention that is being given behind this amendment.
Thank you very much. Pass on to Telkom, the monster.
not a monster, it's a crocodile. Of course, we hope that we're not that monster as we are portrayed to be. Chairperson, good afternoon. Before we start, I'm going to first introduce the delegation. Firstly, I'm Fumi Plaki. I'm from Regulation Public Policy, Stakeholder Management Department. Next to me is Tando Libanga, is our Senior Legal Advisor, Dr. Andrew Barense, the Executive for Regulatory Strategy and Management, and Graham Keith from Regulatory Compliance, who's going to do the presentation. Telkom welcomes the opportunity to present to you the amendment, the ECA Amendment Bill. I hope that we will engage with you and share with you our views and sort of alleviate or eliminate the view or the perception that we are the monsters. I'm going to hand over to Graham Keith and thereafter to first Dr. Barense, who's going to give the overview of the presentation and the focal points on our presentation. Thereafter, Graham Keith will do the presentation. Thank you. Dr. Barense.
Thank you very much, Chair and honorable members. So we will stick to the script and speak directly to the bill, because that may be the best way to add value in the discussion that we're having here. Others have alluded to the challenges in implementing or operationalizing the ECA. For example, as you may have heard, the license conversion process in and of itself will be completed by July 2008. There's another process of converting the VANS licenses. So it seems to us that the bill really introduces a new dynamic to some of the existing critical processes. And what the licensing of SOE seems to do is really at a local government, national, regional, international level, it introduces a dynamicism of which we think the implications have not really in many instances been considered or can be understood. So what we're going to speak to are really two issues, some of which have already been alluded to. We're going to speak about the process of licensing the SOEs, and in some way we have a suggestion that may help do so with or without a beauty contest. That seems to be the big issue so far. And secondly, once these entities have been, licenses have been granted, we're going to speak about playing by the same rules, and my colleague will just elaborate on those two. So those are really the two contributions. Again, we're speaking to our written submission, and we're confining it very much to the bill, because we think that's really the best way to make our contribution. Over to Graham.
Thank you. I think it'll be quite short, because many of the main concepts have already been discussed at length today. Our point of departure is the separation that we see necessary as described in 2J of the Act, the object of the Act, which provides that there should be a clear allocation of roles and assignment of tasks between policy formulation and regulation. We're well aware that ICASA has been busy with the new licensing structures and licensing conversions since about August last year. There's been many draft regulations that have been put in the public domain. There's been workshops, there's been public hearings. And the program is already quite far advanced. The ICASA has already announced their plan going forward. They're going to be bringing out standard terms and conditions, final standard terms and conditions, draft specific terms and conditions. And there's many regulations that are currently in the public domain that will become final regulations in the near future. We have the view that licensing is an ICASA function, and that if there is any ministerial direction to ICASA, it should be a direction that ICASA addresses the process by which public entities should be licensed. There are mechanisms in the ICASA Act to do that, such as one of the previous speakers mentioned, Section 4B. We are of the view that the licensing of public entities will probably not be limited to Infraco. There's others on the horizon. There's municipalities. And one would need a proper framework for licensing of public entities. So if the ICASA goes through the process of a public process to produce such a framework and such a process, then whatever public entity has to be licensed can plug into that process. And that process would then be arrived at via a duly orderly process according to the Act. With the licensing of different entities, as I said just now, we're going to be the process of converting all the existing licenses is far advanced. ICASA's got a draft regulation out for the processes and procedures for licensing other entities. And there's going to be many new licensees on the market or entering the market. One of our chief contentions is that all licensees should be playing by the same rules. Whatever framework is provided or whatever framework is established, whatever license terms and conditions are brought out should apply to all licensees, whether they be non-public entity or public entity licensees. There shouldn't be separate and special rules for certain licensees. Just with regard to the actual licenses that will be issued, we all know that there's essentially broadcasting licenses aside, there's essentially two types of communication license. That is the electronic communication network service license and the electronic communication service license. It appears to Telkom, having a look at the memorandum attached to the bill and so on and various other instances, that the intention with public entities is to license network type licensees. In other words, infrastructure licensees who will then be providing infrastructure and facilities to other service licensees who will then in turn, according to the definition in the Act of the Service Licensee, will be providing services to the public and sections of the public. One of the honourable members referred to Section 5.6 of the Act. Now, at the risk of sounding like a monopolist, if I cast my mind back a few years to when we were a monopoly, I would imagine that the purpose of the intention behind the minister needing to provide a ministerial direction specifically for the licensing of a network license would be for practical reasons such as we've got limited frequency spectrum. You may need to limit the amount of licensees that are digging up the road, civil works and that type of thing. So I would imagine that was the reason behind that. But possibly with the licensing process, that's something that ICASA would also need to consider. Would be those limitations on spectrum, because ICASA is also responsible for the frequency spectrum. Just to keep it short then, I think our plea is that we need certainty in the regulatory environment in the country, and certainly the process by which licenses are issued is part of that certainty. And if public entities are to join in the fray, then there should be an orderly process for licensing of public entities. And our suggestion is that ICASA being encumbered with the licensing process should be the one to come up with that framework for that process. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Questions? Randy?
Friendly prices right down and allow competition to flourish, not operate in this area raised by Siyabonga, we wouldn't have sat with us. We would have all been home now. But we sit with it now. It's also strange when you hear many and those that will come after Telkom, everybody commenting on the licenses and now we should be done and all of that. And yet when they had to apply and get licensed, we need all these concerns. I mean, everybody's quiet when they must get a license. I'm sure if Telkom reduces their prices to 50%, they will still make a couple of bucks profit. There wouldn't be a need for Epracom. But I always ask the question, why suddenly there's competition? More than one player, suddenly they'll find all the reasons to bring the prices down. And there's no competition, you find all the reasons to have the prices up, high up, and to a point where, unfortunately, Telkom, some of the vans had to revert to court to get you just to connect them. You know, I'm sure different codes will be different from now on. Second, maybe a Telkom can venture into some kind of speculation. Do you see a great take-up the moment if Rutgers will be licensed operating and just all of that, Thompson is, and none of the other operators will also build their own backbone? Do you see there's a great take-up? Because the concern is, you know, we've seen it in the past where somebody comes up with a brilliant idea, we need if Rutgers, there will be a huge take-up. Then it doesn't happen. I would have what they call a proverbial white elephant. In a year or two down the line, somebody buys for 10 rand because nobody's using it. Current operators are building their own backbone because they can't, or their own infrastructure because they can't wait for Telkom's price to come down or the infrastructure to start to provide services. So I just want them to venture into where they go over.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's very difficult to say at this stage whether a licensee like Telkom will or won't use the network and the infrastructure of Infraco. It will probably depend on a lot of instances, a lot of... For example, the price, of course, will be important. The service levels that are offered would be important. The areas where the infrastructure is available, it could be that that Infraco has infrastructure in an, available in an area where Telkom doesn't at that moment, and then it might be attractive to use that infrastructure. So it's very difficult to say yes or no. It may be in certain instances that Telkom and other licensees would want to. I would imagine that there's other licensees that may come on the market that perhaps don't have the extensive network that Telkom has got that may want to use that as an alternative. But, yes, I think time would tell. It's probably very difficult at this stage to say the extent to which that network will be used.
Chair, if I can just respond. It's unfortunate that we're not really addressing the substantive arguments and confining ourselves to the bill before us. But let me say this. There's currently a market review process underway in which the regulator is wanting to take the big pie and break it up into different markets, define the boundaries of that market, then see the extent to which there is competition, and then come to some declaration as to how now do we address whatever problems there may be in that market. And then we've made substantive contributions as how we see the various markets unfolding and how we see the role that we have in each of those markets and the role that others play in that market. And it may just be useful also then for honorable members to just familiarize themselves with some of that content. The other issue I want to speak to is we have a bill before us that essentially speaks about the licensing of SOEs in different aspects of the sector. Now, we understand that the issue of price is important. We understand the issue of access and connectivity is important, but we also accept that there are other public values that operators create. For example, no other operator in this country has ever invested as much in infrastructure and in facilities, and forward-looking, no other operator has made as big a commitment to do so in terms of getting facilities and network infrastructure in the ground. Now, it may not speak to price, it may not speak to access, it may speak to quality of service, reliability and safety, but these are other public value and public other interests that we must now start broadening the debate too. It does not always start and end with price. There are other issues at stake. But that is not really the forum for this discussion or debate. We have come here to present and talk to the bill and how we see policymakers resolve the problem that is at hand. And it's a problem of process. How does one do it in a way that is equitable and fair and just? And once these entities are licensed, how then should they relate to the other entities? So that at the end of the day, what we all really want to do is make the pie bigger, and one of the previous presenters spoke to it, so that we really have facilities-based competition, because that is essentially what is the biggest lack. And I will confine my brief comments to that now, Chair.
Yeah, no, it's always, of course, so poignant to listen to Dr. Barr and considering his past. Well, I mean, Dr. Barr knows that what government had wanted was a duopoly, which is like alien versus predator. But what you've got instead now is you've got a crocodile, because Neotel was going to be a vertically integrated entity, but it's now sort of a flat crocodile, and then there's Neotel in addition. But I thought what could be useful, because, you know, our telecom in our case, but the old telcos are the ones with the real experience, and there's always an information asymmetry. And there's stuff they know about which we could all benefit from. And I want to ask them about this whole approach to public entities and SOEs. Did I understand, is Dr. Kitt, Mr. Kitt, correctly, he's saying that the minister could do a policy directive. But then ICASA could set the framework through one of its inquiries, which sounds to me a really intriguing idea. If I understood him correctly, how much would appear in that policy directive? That's now the first part of the question. Then he justified that approach by saying, because there are, after all, other SOEs and public entities involved here, and they include the municipalities. And I just, you know, we haven't spoken about those yet. But it seems to me all wrong. I think there's no place for the municipalities in this bill, this debate. Because as far as I know, any municipality of district size or below can, as of right, under a class license, simply register and start providing networks or services for that matter. And the bigger ones, there is nothing to stop the municipalities under the ECA as it stands from becoming telcos. It's one of the nice breakthrough things we did. It's a different issue whether it's wise for a municipality to do all the billing and all that stuff, and whether they shouldn't just be doing wholesaling. That's a different, but it's okay. The ECA is already there. Let the municipality sort this thing out. And every one of the big cities and all are exploring the terrain. It's okay. I mean, I don't think it serves as any kind of excuse or justification for now doing a broad amendment to the ECA dealing with SOEs. But the other thing where Telkom can really help us is the big issue of the undersea cables. Because InfraCo is not just the terrestrial family fiber optics, it's also the undersea cables. And I, for one, don't have an absolutely clear understanding of which portions you license. When InfraCo gets a license now, how's that going to work? Is it going to be landing rights? Is it the last 12 nautical miles? And honestly, we actually do rely on Telkom for information like this. I mean, the cable engineer is not here today as far as I can see, but won't you address us on that? Because there I could see a possible argument for saying the approach is ought to be, let the minister do a short policy directive then, but then let's have a process run by ICASA, which one hopes doesn't take too long because I think there is a certain urgency, with InfraCo not least relating to the undersea cables, which we assume we don't know how far down the track this stuff is. There's money already committed, I think. So it's that process question, please. Could you, how little could one put in a policy directive, in fact?
Yes, you're correct in saying our cable expert isn't here today, but just going back to your first statement about the municipalities and class licenses, I think that municipalities being more than 25% state-owned automatically qualify for an individual license, which puts them into the individual category and not into the class category, which seems to then put them into the category of 5-6 of the Act, where a ministerial direction is required. Just getting them back to the mechanism by which ICASA could be directed to come up to establish a framework. We haven't really, and in our submission we didn't propose any wording or anything like that, because I think that's quite a complicated process and there's lots of factors that would need to be taken into consideration. But just off the cuff, if one looks at the bill in section 2, where the proposed amendment 13B, where the minister must order ICASA to provide a framework for the licensing of a public entity, so that could be changed with a few words, and I'm not a lawyer, I'm not even going to try and change it, but I think the sentiment there would be that the directive to ICASA would be then to come up with a framework for the licensing of public entities, and the mechanism that ICASA could use would be in the ICASA Act would be section 4B, the inquiry process, that can launch an inquiry into virtually any matter. Then as a result of that public process, a framework could be established. And it might be a little bit of a lengthy process, this, but I think if one looks at the extent of the possible licensees that could be come into consideration for such a license, it would probably be worth it in the long run, and I think it would create a more certain environment. We'd have a framework that was established by a proper public process, by a due proper process, and it would then be accepted as such, and the licensees could then be issued according to that framework and that process.
Except we don't want a special deal for public entities, of course, but thank you very much. I think that is useful.
Thank you very much.
Can anybody answer this thing on what do you license on a cable?
I'm not going to try and get into all the intricacies of the cable itself, but just a very general statement that a license like Telkom's license In the old parlance, we were licensed to provide public switch telecommunication services, and in order to provide those services, we were licensed to construct, maintain, and operate a public switch telecommunication network. Now, the network itself was defined both in the license and in the previous act, and the network included the international service. Now, those definitions have all fallen away in the new act, but they were defined in the previous act, the local access, the local service, the long-distance service, the international service. And that international service could be provided using, and it was specifically mentioned, satellites or cables. The EC Act, in fact, in the definition of electronic communication network, does mention cables, and specifically in brackets it mentions undersea cables. So a person licensed to provide a network would then be licensed to provide international connectivity either by satellite communication or by undersea optic fiber communication.
Thank you very much. Can we then call upon Smile Communication? Ms. Kessie? Just hold on, yeah? Yes.
I was saying that Telecom has come up because of the proposal.
Just hold on, yeah? Question,
yeah? It has come with that proposal, although it indicated that the man forecast in terms of the proposal raised, in terms of maybe directly would have the regulator come to the permit and so on. I was wondering, say, whether they can do some further work around further work, just the participation of the tax government, with in terms of how the directives can be given to the regulator to come up with. I'm just saying, because you are saying that there is no big assessment around the problem,
Good. Chairperson, could Eric repeat that with the mic on, please?
You see, the mic is not working. Okay, it was working. Look, Chair, I'm saying Telcom has come up with some proposal around the issue of the minister to direct the regulator to come with a framework for licensing a public entity. All what I'm saying is that can they elaborate on that? Not now. Maybe in a written form around along those lines, so that as we elaborate on the matter as a committee, you can look into that. That's what I'm requesting.
You got it. Can you draft something for us? Translate your proposal into some legal drafting. Good. Smile.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, Smile is appreciative of the opportunity to make a submission to yourself today. My team includes myself and only myself, Leanne Cassie. I'm Head of Regulatory Affairs. It's a one-woman team. We had 10 men to present, but then they sent me instead. So, sure, I would be able to handle it. Chair, I think it would be prudent for me before I start to give a brief background about Smile Communications. Our vision is to be a low-cost telecoms operator that will reduce the cost of communication and that will provide services to bottom-of-the-pyramid customers. Our business plan is focused solely on bottom-of-the-pyramid customers, meaning those from about LSM 4 below, those with average revenues of about 7 to 14 rands a day. This would not be the proper forum in which we would like to take you through our business plan, but we would welcome the opportunity for yourself to come to our offices in Johannesburg for us to take you through a more detailed presentation of our business plan and our good intentions for the country. Here we are in possession of a VANS license, a value-added network service license, which was issued this year. In terms of our track record on the management level, we've got a management team with a proven track record in establishing and managing successful national as well as international companies. We want to establish operations across Africa and the Middle East, and we're in the process of looking into establishing these operations in the different countries. We are a well-funded organization. We're fully funded for the next 5 years, and therefore, in terms of looking at this broadly of government national priorities, in terms of foreign direct investment, that is something else that we offer to the country through our funding. And we've already developed a business plan for operation in the South African market. What would also be good, Chairperson, before I go into the submission on the EC Amendment Bill, is to tell you the context in terms of which our submission is made. In as much as SMILE says that it wants to be a bottom-of-the-pyramid customer operator, we find ourselves currently as being a bottom-of-the-pyramid licensee. Much of what is said here today is being said in absence from current processes that are underway. And in the room we heard today that VANS for the first time would be able to construct networks, etc. Unfortunately, the process is not as easy or as smooth as the ECA might have intended it to be. We're sitting with a convergence process that ICASA, our future at SMILE, is not as bright as other operators. We're talking about a framework that is being established in stages of liberalization with certain licensees being favored due to dates in terms of which licenses were issued, etc., or in terms of which when they were able to get into the market. Meaning, I'm coming into the market now, this year, 2007, but I'm a fully funded organization. I have good intentions for the country. I want to provide low-cost telecommunication services, but getting a license is one of the most hardest things that SMILE has to do, specifically to construct a national network. So our comment in terms of the bill is made from a point of view to look at how can we be accommodated as we see ourselves as those fully in compliance of ensuring strategic ICT infrastructure investment in this country. So our submission is made in that context, and it should be understood within that context and in terms of the hurdles that we are currently experiencing. Our business plan, further to expand on it, is based on affordable, accessible and alternative means of communication services at the bottom of the pyramid customers. And what we believe and what forms the context of our submission is that government intervention is necessary for policy implementation in a developmental country. And South Africa is a country in development. It is not yet a developed country. Further, Chairperson, there must be recognition of the contribution that can be made by private companies to strategic ICT infrastructure investment in this country, not just public entities. In terms of government intervention in a developmental state, it's critical for Cabinet and the Minister to identify strategic initiatives to increase universal service and access. And where this is identified, it ought to be facilitated with Cabinet approval and issue of policy directions by the Minister to ICASA. Of course, I wouldn't be sitting here making this presentation if it was that easy in terms of the existing Section 5.6, but like I say, for people like myself at SMILE, it's not that easy to obtain a license and do good for this country. The proposed amendment is supportive of the objects of the ECA, and it is within the purpose of the ECA. We see it more as a complementary role that government plays, and also we may argue how right or wrong this is, but if you look at 5.6, 5.6 creates the precedent going forward for something like this to be implemented into the bill, to the extent that it takes into account private companies. So, what the proposed bill intends to do is for the minister to issue a policy direction and not a license. Therefore, similarly, it, like Section 5.6, which is in the ECA, this new proposed 5.13 does not add a new dimension or take away any independence from ICASA. It still obliges ICASA to issue licenses interdependently, taking into account what government has to say. South Africa is in a developmental state, and I think this is not something I have to argue further. It's 14 years since democracy, but we have not yet developed, but we are in the process of developing. There's a significant gap between the have and the have not in this country. Investments that will need affordability, accessibility, etc., is not one unique to public entities. And I think we've heard in the room today that throughout the years you had public entities and parastatals that were formed with the intention of increasing universal service and access, providing low-cost communication services. But we still sit here with the president of the country in the past several years of his State of the Nation address saying that the cost of doing business in this country and the cost of communications is too high. Smile submission is principally that the proposed amendment should not be entity-focused, it should be goal-focused. It should not be entity-specific, it should be goal-specific. And what is important, what is introduced by the proposed amendment is for there to be strategic ICT investment and infrastructure. And what we're saying is, once you focus on this at the end of the day, let's try and introduce what will facilitate that, not licensing of a governmental or public entity exclusively. So that is principally SMILE's submission. In terms of identifying an initiative, and as we heard in the room today, some mentioned with the licensing of entities like Infraco, there'll be a 20% reduction in cost, there'll be a 30% reduction, and then I even heard it went down to 80% reduction. These are just verbal commitments, but to what extent are we certain that if Infraco is licensed, that there will be a reduction in cost? And to what extent there can be a 5% reduction in cost, but why go through all this effort to introduce somebody like somebody who's going to provide a 5%? This country needs something significantly more than 20%, 30%, etc. And we're saying once you focus on the goal and not the entity, you will achieve the reduction of cost in this country. In identifying a specific initiative to increase strategic ICT investment in this country, this must be underpinned by commitment and sound business and technical plan to be tied to license conditions. So it's not just what people say or the hype that is created in the market, but interrogating what exactly is being proposed and looking at tying this to business sense to licenses. For example, you could say to a company who comes up with a proposal that if you're saying you can achieve the provision of services to the underserved market in 10 years, 80% of the underserved market in 10 years, we will evaluate you on that and obviously have commitment levels prior to that date. We also believe that, and once again tying to our argument of South Africa being a developmental state, as you see, we've introduced the Electronic Communications Act and it hasn't reached its true potential. In fact, we're only dealing with conversion now. And the resultant effects of conversion is not yet known. South Africa is developmental. This clause may not be necessary forever or going on indefinitely. SMILE therefore proposes that there be a review clause or a sunset clause, as it is commonly known in legislation. SMILE's proposal, therefore, taking into account that we're saying that the amendment should not be restricted to public entities, but to private entities as well, taking into account discrimination. I don't want to go too much into the point. I think it has been indicated to the committee today during the course of the presentation. Taking into account that private entities should be accommodated to the proposed amendment and taking into account that we should be more goal-specific rather than entity-specific, and taking into account that this would not have to, the intervention by the minister does not have to carry on indefinitely, and there should be a sunset clause, SMILE's proposal is as follows, that the minister may, after having obtained cabinet approval, issue a policy direction in order to, A, initiate and facilitate government intervention in order to ensure strategic ICT infrastructure investment, and then my emphasis, or, instead of and, provide for a framework for the licensing of a public entity by the authority. And then the new proposed review sunset clause would be with effect from a date to be determined by the minister, but which shall not be more than 2 years after the commencement of this section, the provisions of Section 513 shall lapse. The proposed date of 2 years from the commencement of the section is something that the committee can give more thought towards. How long would it take to review a market and the success of a market since implementation of the ESA would be a serious factor to consider in establishing the period of a review clause. Just to quickly conclude, Chairperson, we support the proposed amendment to the extent that it allows for the licensing of public and private entities. We maintain that there's need for governmental intervention specifically in the developmental state that South Africa is in currently, specific to the communication sector. We must look at the ability of private companies to contribute towards development. This is not an impossibility. And when looking at the strategic investment, we also need to look broadly at other objectives of government as GISA, etc. And the proposed amendment should be more goal-focused rather than entity-focused. And with that, I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. That's some interesting ideas. Questions? No questions? Thank you. The new term. Is that?
Thank you, Chair. Again, NEOTO thanks the Portfolio Committee for the opportunity to amplify our written submission in relation to the EC Amendment Bill. The benefit, obviously, of speaking towards the tail end of the hearing is that a lot of what has been said was also included in NEOTO's submission, so we endorse what has been said, and we'll take you through that, Chair. So what I will do is just touch upon some highlights with some background in terms of legislation, the assets, the relationship between NEOTEL and the Department of Public Enterprises, the Infraco Bill, which a number of members of this committee participate in its formulation, as well as some of the policy and regulatory issues and challenges, let me say, that are associated with this amendment bill. And my colleague, Ms. Michelle Hajari, is going to touch upon the issues related more specifically to the nature of the relationship between Infraco and NEOTEL. Chair, now what we see is that if we look back retrospectively, the creation of the SNO was intended to meet a number of the objectives already espoused in the ECA, a number of the objectives mentioned in previous presentations in terms of private entities licensed as infrastructure-based operators to meet the infrastructure bottlenecks and backlogs that do exist in the country. The fact that the SNO was supposed to have been licensed in 2002 of May, and that process was delayed by a number of years due to the fact that one of NEOTEL's existing shareholders challenged the ministerial process around it, delayed it. Now, if we look at, there were fundamental constitutional flaws in that particular process, which resulted in NEOTEL's licensing being delayed. And it is of grave concern to NEOTEL that, we haven't learned from our mistakes. To the extent that at this particular point in time, we find that there are fundamental flaws in this particular piece of legislation, which have been touched upon in the sense that there's intervention from the executive branch in the licensing process, which is already underway by the regulator. The assets were initially destined for NEOTEL, as the SOEs, Transnet and Eskom, equity contributions to Nailtel. Those assets, the long-distance assets, were intended to meet the infrastructure backlog of the country that has been touched upon by a number of operators in this room during the course of these hearings. When Nailtel learned that the Department of Public Enterprises wanted to retain those assets because it didn't believe that as a private operator, the initial rate of return that Nailtel would want as a result of the prices charged to the market for leasing that infrastructure would meet the overall objectives. So therefore, government decided to retain those assets, thinking that government would look for a utility rate of return as opposed to a market rate of return. Nailtel then entertained government, or specifically the Department of Public Enterprises, in commercial negotiations as to how Nailtel could perhaps lease that infrastructure on a medium-term basis from the Department of Public Enterprises with a view of meeting both the state's objectives of providing additional telecommunications infrastructure in the country to lower the cost of services, or noting that infrastructure is a significant input cost in telecommunications service delivery. Those negotiations started way back as far as August last year. They're still ongoing. Fortunately, we have made some progress with the Department of Public Enterprises. Coupled with that process, in order to create InfraCo, what happened was the InfraCo bill was put forward before the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprises. And in that bill, we know that it was the initial intention to license InfraCo in that particular bill, but fortunately, reason prevailed, and that committee deferred to this particular Committee on Communications to say, deal with the licensing aspect of InfraCo. And hence, we're here today. Now, other operators have touched upon the fact that there is an EC amendment process going on right now. ICASA has set out a time frame and a process for when it wants to conclude the license conversion process for existing licensees and issuing of new licensees. The particular point of concern for Nailtel in this regard, Chair, is the fact that this EC amendment bill seeks to give preferential treatment to state-owned enterprises in terms of jumping the queue for having licenses issued under the ECA to the detriment of private operators. Chair, this is the crux of the fundamental flaw that we see in this particular piece of legislation, which will open it up to legal challenge, Chair, and perhaps even more so successful legal challenges will even further delay government's objectives of having InfraCo license. So the solution, because I noting what one of the members asked one of the presenters earlier was, if you know the problem, provide us with a solution. I think the solution is before us in the sense that ICASA has a licensing framework process that other operators or all existing operators are participating in and following, and for a state-owned enterprise such as InfraCo to receive preferential treatment and circumvent that process would undermine the regulatory certainty that is being created by ICASA's process, and it would deter additional investment in the sector because we don't know, once you have a license, the rug will be taken out from under your feet in terms of how you can go forward, in terms of what the market structure is going to be looking like for a particular period of time, Chair. So with that, I will hand over to my colleague, Ms. Michelle Hajar, who will take you through some more details of our presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not going to go into the detail of the actual slide presentation because you have the information. I'm just going to give you some very key points. The town has pointed out to you the relationship that Nailtel has had with InfraCo. I think I would not be doing justice to our presentation if I didn't tell you what the impact is of now having to change the policy. He has gone through what the initial policy was, and you see from that there has been a digression from the initial policy in terms of where InfraCo is now destined to be. As a result of that, Nailtel, in its application for the license and its business plan, has placed a great deal of reliance on the InfraCo infrastructure, because that's what it is, and That infrastructure was to be an integral part of the NeoTel rollout. Now, everybody has often asked, why is it that NeoTel has not come into the market? What is the delay? I think you need to understand that you gave us a license, and then you basically took away the basis of the license. As a result, we have not been able to enter the market at the time that we were supposed to. When this policy changed, we were not in a position to counteract that change in policy. I mean, you can't construct a network or replace that long-distance network in a matter of a week. It's just not possible. So I think you need to understand, as NeoTel, what this impact has been for us. The other aspect I want to touch on is what the amendment actually does is you're talking about licensing public entities. And we've heard a lot of the operators talking to the fact that various municipalities, well, presently municipalities have an expectation. They are of the belief that this amendment will allow them an opportunity to obtain a license, an infrastructure license. Now, this is another, I think one of the things we need to do is when we look at these amendments, to see how practically this is implemented. As NeoTel, presently, we are in a position where, in order to roll out our infrastructure, we need to approach various municipalities in order to perhaps hang infrastructure on the existing poles or run ducts, dig up trenches and lay fiber. Now, because of this amendment and the fact that the municipalities have this expectation, they are holding us to ransom by not allowing us the rights of way. Basically, and I'm not going to mention any specific municipality, but basically we're unable to get those rights, to roll out that infrastructure, because some of them actually expect us to sell that infrastructure to them, and on that basis only will they allow us the right of way. And so we are constrained by that. I think that the thing is we're going to be able to compete with them. They see us as a competitor. So obviously they take advantage of the situation. I don't think this amendment is going to make it any easier for us. In fact, it's going to complicate issues even further. And you would understand that this further impacts on our ability to roll out. So I think you need to seriously consider that in affecting this amendment and allowing public entities to apply for these licenses. The other issue I'd like to touch upon is the policy, the Ministerial Policy Directive, as well as this amendment. Now, we all have heard that ICASA is currently engaged in this license conversion process. Parallel to that, you have the Ministerial Policy Directive that says to ICASA you have to, in fact, consider other vans operators and prioritize those as future infrastructure licenses as well. Now, whilst you have this existing legislation and you have these initiatives going on, I think what has not happened is you've not allowed for these initiatives to be implemented before you've decided there isn't enough competition. Because you may find that you license these entities and actually achieve your objective of wanting to introduce competition and reducing prices. Before actually allowing all of this to be implemented, you're going ahead just licensing some other entity like you've done previously. I mean, Telkom, Vodacom, even us as NeoTel already have government as shareholders. So why would Infraco be any different? You've heard every other operator in this room tell you about their good intentions. We've all had good intentions. But the thing is, how do you actually translate that intention into what you want to achieve, which is reducing the cost of telecommunication? I mean, NeoTel, you can write this out and say they're going to reduce that, but how do they effectively do that? And this is why we're saying to you that if you want to license another entity, then the ECA has an existing provision. There is a framework within which you need to do that. The only way you can test an intention is to ask an operator to come forward and tell you how they will make good on that undertaking. And the only way they can do that is to produce a business plan. you need to test the viability of the Infraco business plan, like you've done with all of the other operators, to see and ensure that they can deliver on all of the objectives you've set out for them in the Infraco bill, which is going to do here. Everybody can come here and tell you what a wonderful intention they have. But how effective is that going to be? And I think that's what needs to be addressed. You need to have a licensing process that Infraco has to be subjected to. It has to be transparent. It has to be in the public because, I mean, they're intending to provide a benefit to the public. So let the public tell you whether they see a benefit in this. Put it out to the public and test the viability of that license. I don't think either that anybody has stopped. I mean, we all talk about Infraco, but what is Infraco? It's a network. If that network is currently there, is that network really going to deliver on all of these objectives? Does it have, as we speak, the ability and the quality of a network to compete effectively with Telkom and the other operators? And I think that's something that this committee seriously needs to consider as well. With that, I think I've made my key points. I'm not sure if the town wants to say something in conclusion. I'm not sure your question.
Thanks very much. Question?
I was too interested in what you had, horrified, in what you had to say about the municipalities. This is all of this, notwithstanding Chapter 4 of this thing, which I also had difficulties with, because it allows you guys to ride roughshod over it all right away. No, that's too extraordinary. You're saying, Chancellor, you're saying they think this amendment to the ECA is going to what? Fast track? And are some of them actually, all right. Whereas, in fact, they should be waiting for the Section 5, Sub 6 green light, and then they should be getting. Extraordinary. I had no idea. Thank you.
Eric?
Let me ask a fundamental question, a principal question. Look, Chair, I just want to check that around the 10th of June this year, NeoTel make a presentation to public enterprise when we're dealing in Infraco, supporting that we must deem the license of Infraco for operation. In October 2007, the fundamental principle has changed in such a way that to do that is unconstitutional and all these things which have been said. I'm just saying a principle question. I understand if everything is only said here disregarding the social economic imperatives, only looking the side of business interest and profitability and so on, losing the side of the social economic imperatives and so on. Then I'll understand the reason why within 2 or 3 months there's a huge change in that approach. I just want to be told how in the short space of time an organization change complete on what they believe as of deeming. I think deeming was the word that we were trying to do, deeming that license to have been obtained by Infraco and so on. If I can just be schooled on that, what I don't understand from the principal point of view before I can engage in other people.
Chair, if I may respond to that. Firstly, the presentations that NeoTel made to DPE, I must point out, were done in camera. And that was because, and I can give you an explanation to that, but I would also then ask that it be done in camera because what is key and the basis of this entire approach is an agreement that we signed with DPE at that time, and I'm not at liberty to disclose that agreement. So I can give you an explanation. Thanks.
I'm not asking about in camera, I'm saying a public process. We had a public process where Infra NeoTel make a presentation to public during the process of Infraco. It's a public process, not in camera. The principle change in position, that's what I'm asking. I'm asking the principle matter. I don't want to deal with in-camera issues. I understand those. A document submitted in a public hearing like this one, unless the impression which is created is that all of these entities here, if tomorrow another process comes, they will change completely because they are safeguarding their interest. If that is the case, I need to understand as a public representative, what for me, as much as I care about the market, but I also care about the social economic imperative. So do I think some of the players in the market do care about that? So that's what I'm asking, not in camera, public document in a public hearing. I just want to check the principle matter on the saturation.
I mean, in response to the honorable member's question, we'd have to, again, because of the basis of the discussions that we've been having with Infoco based upon the MOU with the Department of the Public Enterprise, which that particular provision of the presentation of the chair that the member of parliament is alluding to, Chair, we would have to obtain the permission of the Department of Public Enterprise, because that's it's an agreement between the two of us where the confidentiality provisions that we have to before we disclose them, it has to be mutually agreed between the two of us in relation to that particular provision, Chair.
We're going to have to deal with it sooner or later, because underlying all of this was, and I thought, shall I or can't I ask, but what is the deal between you? And you know, make it clear you've got on. But you know, we've been here before as well. The shareholders agreement between SBC and Telecom Malaysia and Telcom signed in London in 19-nothing is the thing that underlay the entire problem with Telcom. And nobody else ever had sight of it. And we can't really go into a situation again where we actually don't know what the deal is, and therefore its emanations and manifestations, you know, become more and more problematic. So sooner or later we're going to have to deal with it, whether it means in a closed session of a committee or there are other instruments too, the Access to Public Information Act and so on. But sooner or later I think we need to know. And it is, of course, utterly germane and relevant to what we're talking about here, because we are thinking of imposing a requirement that Infraco must be wholesale, cost-related, all of this stuff. And we're doing that without knowing what agreement is in place, whether you have a four-year deal or what.
Kennedy. Yeah, I understand the commercial arrangement. I don't want to enter into that. That is confidential. I'm saying, this is a public document.
Really?
I will read the parties I'm talking about with page 9 of that document. In a public hearing, that's if I'm addressing myself. Nothing else. I don't know any other things. I know what has been submitted in the public hearing. We said Infraco needs to obtain individual ECMS and ECS license under the ECA. If Infraco is required to apply for those licenses in the ordinary course, then it will take many years before Infraco can become operational. This will delay new test launch, and so on. To avoid this, the bid, which is the Infraco bid, should grant Infraco deemed license. The advantage of granting Infraco deemed license is as opposed to the license exemption in this will nevertheless enable ICASA to retain a high degree of regulatory control over Infraco through the imposition of license condition on Infraco. Then I'm saying when the right, it was only on the business interest without the public. That's the principle matter I'm asking. Because within the few space of months, then it was there. Totally change of that position. So the disparity part of it, that's what I wanted to ask. Thank you.
Any further questions? Sandy? No, we're going to finish up now. There's one more presentation, MGN. Ikasa, we've had the presentation already. MTN, where are you? Is that Mr. the fifth?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Chairperson, honorable members, cognizant of the time,
And the fact that this is the graveyard shift and a lot of people are starting to get fidgety, I'm going to be as quick and as succinct as possible. Also, no new revelations from our side in this particular process. We do support and appreciate government's initiatives to provide reliable, affordable and ubiquitous telecoms infrastructure in line with the ECA objects. However, we do believe that this is the bill is clearly designed as a vehicle to license InfraCo. But the purpose of the bill is very, very broad, and as a result, we believe that it reaches far beyond the provisions of just a licensing solution. Much has been stated about Section 3 and Section 5, and similarly to some of the submissions that you've heard today, we believe that Section 5 is not the place if an amendment is really necessary. But our real message today here is that the current ECA, the bill as it, or the act as it stands, already makes provision for an appropriate policy direction that may be issued by the minister to make InfraCo possible and others. It does entail a public process, an ITA, but there is nothing to suggest that currently that ICASA should only follow a beauty contest where only one person wins the contest, and neither is there anything that suggests that InfraCo will not be able to make the grade, so to speak. So we believe that it is currently possible to actually make this all happen. We believe also that if a bill or if an amendment is really, really necessary, it ought to be placed within the confines of Section 3. Another concern which we would like to raise is that the bill in its current format will most probably grant InfraCo rights and privileges that are different from other licensees. And we are slightly concerned about the fact that granting this particular license outside of the ambit of the current ECA will not serve to cement the very processes that are currently contained in the ECA. And we believe that licensees should be licensed in a fair and non-discriminatory licensing process. So, in short, Chair, MTN reiterates its support for government policy to promote reliable, ubiquitous and affordable ICT infrastructure, that it is already possible within the ECA to make this all happen as we speak, but that the current bill on the table creates the possibility of a further and a different licensing process, and again, but if it is really absolutely necessary to amend the Act, Section 3 is the appropriate section in the Act to accommodate the amendment and not Section 5. That concludes our presentation, Chair.
Thank you very much. You're mindful of the fact that we are tired. We appreciate that also. Questions? Sandy.
Chairperson, maybe more to Newtown. If this IFRACO bill, the license goes through, let's be crude, does it mean the death knell to them? I mean, if you look at this, this was part of the family jewels, which they've relied on. Further eroding to that business plan. Does it mean there's no business plan for a new job? Yeah.
Any questions for MTN? None. Do you want to respond?
Thank you, Chair. The specific issue pertains to the nature of the commercial arrangement that Neotel and InfraCo are busy negotiating at the moment. As I said, the nature that agreement contemplates a medium-term relationship between the parties, whereby Neotel would lease and then manage those assets on behalf of InfraCo, noting that InfraCo is not a telecommunications operator and doesn't have, you know, the skill set at the current moment to manage those assets, whereas Neotel does. Now, once InfraCo is licensed, like any other infrastructure-based licensee or ECNS licensee, they would be obligated under the ECA to make those that infrastructure available to any licensee that requests to interconnect or to lease capacity from InfraCo. So to the extent that Infraco would be licensed, it would give very limited effect to the particular the timing of the relationship that Neotel and Infraco envisage having going forward. So if Infraco is not licensed, then Neotel, the commercial relationship, that aspect in terms of the duration of the commercial relationship between Neotel and Infraco would not be threatened.
You say something, Are you just making a side remark, or are you raising an issue? Oh, okay, fine. All right, then I think we've come to the end of the public hearing. I want to thank all the presenters and the various interest groups that have come here for the brevity of the input, the preciseness. I think they've been very useful. I didn't think we would track all this in and be completed by almost 6:30. Dinner is available. Please, we have incurred, we've incurred costs, and I really want you to share and join us for dinner. Otherwise, it will be a fruitless expenditure on our part if all of you disappear and the food would have to go to the piggery. So please, join us for supper, and then you can leave after that. Supper next door. And the ANC members, we've got a study group member.